This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Sample the man on the guitar, Scott Daniels.
KPFT's Spring Pledge Drive kicks off May 7th, but you can help us out.
Listening to Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston 90.1 FM, and Galveston 89.5 FM.
We'll be right back. If you're coming to me, you need nerves of steel. I take corners on two wheels. It's a never-ending circus ride. The plane of heart need not apply. We beat a locum over and over. Destiny turns on a dime. I go where the wind blows. Tame a wild rose. Welcome to my crazy life. We part before this night is through. I could fall in love with you. Set you free. We beat a locum over and over. Destiny turns on a dime. I go where the wind blows. You can't tame a wild rose. Welcome to my crazy life.
The program contains subject matter that portrays gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered people as first-class citizens, deserving of an equal share of the American dream. Topics like this are known to piss off televangelists, backwater preachers, some talk show hosts, blue-haired biddies, several members of Congress, and other socially unacceptable outcasts like radical right-wing nut jobs. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
You have tuned into After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude, a continuing tradition here on KPFT 90.1 FM. The crew of After Hours is ready to bring you news, interviews, discussions, and music geared to the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community and our allies. We are a diverse group here, but we all have one thing in common. We are out of the closet and urge everyone to come out of his or her closet as well. That means recognizing who you are, standing up for yourself and your rights, and being proud of who you are. We understand that this might not be possible due to age, job, or frame of mind, but remember, we are here especially for you. So kick back and relax and get ready for this week's edition of After Hours.
Houston, Galveston, and the world. This is the May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, May 6th, whatever the hell you want to call us, edition of After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude. My name is Chris Harrison. I'll be your co-executive producer for this evening.
And I'm Jimmy Carper. I'll be the other one.
Thankfully for all of you here in Houston who don't have logo.
What? How rude.
Jimmy Carper was on national television.
Ta-da.
Twice tonight.
Wow. And I didn't even get to see it.
He was on, and you know, last time was about an hour ago.
Mm-hmm.
So there's you on logo on Pick Up the Mic. I got to watch a little bit of it while I was setting up the VCR for it.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to get Catastrophe in here.
Oh.
He's cute.
Oh.
He's yeah. He's F to M, but he's cute.
I know he's F to M.
Hormones did him good.
Uh-huh.
Share. Oh. Pick Up the Mic. It's on Logo. And
it's about queer hip-hop.
Queer hip-hop. And if you do get a chance to see it on Logo and all that, you get to see the lovely studios we have here. The scary thing is that video was shot 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Looks pretty much the damn same thing.
Yeah, the same equipment.
Different banner.
Oh, okay.
It had the Texas flag logo then. And you were clean shaven. You looked 40 years younger.
You're kidding.
No.
I've only had this that long?
Yeah.
Wow.
So.
Wow.
Yes, he was clean shaven in the movie.
Well, my next birthday, I'm going to shave it off.
So finally the balance will match the curtains again.
Something like that. What? What does he mean by that?
Honey, go study your home decorating.
Yeah, I know. No. They match right now, as a matter of fact.
Why did I step into that? You know, I opened the door. I can't be upset that he walked through.
Well, congratulations are in order.
For?
Gayo, the Gay and Lesbian Latino Organization.
Uh-huh.
Because I have a press release here, and I also talked with Abel Rodriguez this evening, who is the executive director and co-founder of the organization,
mm-hmm.
along with Christina Martinez. With application in hand and approval granted by the parade committee, it's official. GAYO, Houston's Gay and Lesbian Latin Organization, it was a part of the Cinco de Mayo parade in Houston. And that parade, which is sponsored by LULAC, the League of United Latin American Citizens. It's a huge milestone for us, said Abel Rodriguez. For years I have attended and been a spectator of the Cinco de Mayo parade, and never have I witnessed a gay and lesbian Latino organization be part of it. GAYO was the first GLBT Latino organization to achieve this goal. Not only are we part of the parade for recognition in the community locally, but in support of same-sex marriages in Mexico City, and now in the state of Saltillo as well, which has just passed recently. This is something to be supportive of and a major step for our brothers and sisters in Mexico, said Rodriguez. So, I talked with Abel, and they had a wonderful time. It was a whole lot of fun. There was a lot of queers there waving rainbow flags along with the Mexican flags, and it was just, he said he had a wonderful time.
Sure, did you put the Mexican eagle in the middle of the rainbow flag, or did you just change the white to a rainbow?
No.
You know how like we do the queer stars and stripes?
Yeah, no, they don't do that.
They don't do that.
No. Not yet. Anyway. So,
I hear wheels spinning on the other end.
Milestone. And
hey, I said it first, I get the copyright protection on that.
What?
You just stick to designing posters for every year, all right?
Oh, so okay. You're talking to our After Hours Quickie, who will be up in a couple of minutes.
Mm-hmm. You wish he'll be up in a couple of minutes.
Yeah, well. Yeah, really. He didn't wear it again.
It's hot enough in here to work.
See? I know. Jade Esteban de Estrada with Icons, the Lesbian and Gay History of the World, Volume 3, is coming to town this Tuesday night, as a matter of fact. And it is co-sponsored by the Gulf Coast Archive and Museum and GAYO. the Gay and Lesbian Latino Organization. Yes. It's a solo musical comedy, winner 2006 award for Best Solo Performance and winner 2006 award for Best Original Music. This is Tuesday, May the 8th, Club 1415 at 1415 California. And it's not hard to get to 1415 California if you can find Slick Willie's on Lower Westheimer, which is, you know, just in the 1300 block.
But in the Montrose, you can find a lot of Slick Willie's.
They better be. And they they better be packaged, too. And if you can, if you can find Slick Willie's, they've got a back parking lot, and Club 1415 is right next door. So it's not that big of a deal.
So you back park at Slick Willie's, just around the corner from Mary's.
Yes, see?
Right over by where you get a Happy Meal.
There you go. Well, I'm sure you can get a Happy Meal at Mary's as well as Slick Willie's. 8 o'clock. Tickets are $15 and available at dubcube.gcam.org or go to the GAIO website, which is houstongaio.org.
And GAIO is spelled?
G-A-L-L-O. Gay and Lesbian Latino Organization.
Also, congratulations need to go out to the Grand Marshals of this year's Pride Parade.
Absolutely. KPFT's own Jack Falinski is male Grand Marshal. And only because this is the first year Jack has allowed his nomination to be put on the ballot. He has deserved that nomination for many, many years, and I'm glad to see him finally attain it. Female Grand Marshal is...
I was hoping you remembered.
Maria Gonzalez. And the honorary Grand Marshal is...
Organizational is the Imperial Court of Houston, Space
Ta-da!
Of the Empire.
ICOH is the one.
And in the big shocker, the honorary breeder...
Yes.
Garnett Coleman.
Yes. They don't call it the honorary breeder. But it's just honorary.
Well, if we leave Turkey Basters out of it, he'd be the honorary breeder. I'm big surprised it's because he ran unopposed.
It is a designation kind of left up to our straight allies who have helped us out over the years. Yes.
Which means he moves, you know, three cars in front there instead of riding with the politicians. He rides up with the Grand Marshals.
There you go. There you go. And it, ICOH was very proud to get that honor. It's their five-year anniversary this year, so we're really looking forward to being up front in the parade.
And the pictures will be up tomorrow.
And the pictures will be up tomorrow, so says Cactus Pete.
Oh, that's
yes,
right.
Indeed.
I forgot. There's other pictures there, too.
Oh,
I forgot I was there. I'm sorry.
Yes, 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 yes.
It was a long time ago when a galaxy far, far away.
That would be at seeowlgraphics.net. Seeowl.net.
Yes.
S-E-E-O-W-L.
Look for Hooters.
Net. Hooters?
Look for Hooters. Seeowl. Hooter.
Ooh, ooh. Oh, those kind of hooters. Oh, gotcha.
Is your
okay.
Eyes showing?
Okay. Now on to other things.
Yeah, we're revoking his privilege.
Yes, I know. Yes, I know. A couple of things going on with the Rhesus, the Empire of the Royal Sovereign and Imperial Court of the Single Star, who will be here next week. For the After Hours Quickie, but...
We hope so. You know how some of these people are with dates and what week of the month it is.
Oh, those folks will be here. later on today, since this is Sunday, right?
No, we're a Saturday show. I don't give a
we
damn what other people think.
We are a Saturday show, but right now it is Sunday, so later on...
That's why
on,
you played the Armenian singing an Italian song in honor of Cinco de Mayo.
Something like that.
Yeah. I guess I could have pulled out Jade. Oh, thank God.
Lillian Devereaux's anniversary of her 29th birthday. And this is hosted by the Marquesa, Lillian Devereaux. The party and show will be at Tony's Corner Park Pocket at 817 West Dallas at 7 p.m. this evening. And it's a benefit for Legacy Community Health Services through Coronation 24. Then, on Friday, May 11th at 9 p.m., Viscountess Craven Moorhead presents the Sock Hop in honor of her birthday at the BRB. My, these old gals are having a lot of birthdays, aren't they? Then, because Morgan Fairview just had one, I believe, last week. Sunday, May the 13th at 8 p.m., the Queen Mothers, Barbara Walker and Shelby St. James present Mamma Mia, Songs My Mother Never Sang to Me at the BRB at 8 o'clock. Friday, May the 18th at 9 p.m. is the Ms. Gay Pride 2006 and Duke 23rd Susan Hayes plus Duchess the 23rd Sherry Harrell presents Love American Style at the BRB. Then Sunday, Sunday after next, May 20th at 8 p.m., the Grand Duke and Grand Duchess Scott Kenyon and Marcia Mink, Gill present Stretch at the BRB. My, you could do a lot of different kinds of songs with a title by that name, couldn't you? Oh. And, okay. And stuff going on with ICOH, Bay City Empire. Let's see. Tonight was, tonight and last night were two wonderful shows. Tonight was the Cinco de Mayo show that ICOH did in conjunction with Gaio. And last night we did, the ICOH did a show in conjunction with Gaio called the Cuatro de Mayo. And yes. Cuatro de Mayo and Cinco de Mayo. Yes, that was a lot of mayo, and yeah, they slathered it on thick, too. But last night's show raised, I believe it was like $570,
which was a lot of Miracle Whip.
Yeah, and tonight's show, I didn't get to stay to hear the total, but both organizations will split the funds there. And, of course, don't forget Breakfast at Mary's at 10 o'clock. And, boy, tomorrow's a big day. Because at 4 o'clock is the debris debacle. Yes, yes. As you know, Blanche has been busy in the south of the playgrounds in her mind for some time now, but she's ready to make an appearance. Some may not realize, but yesterday, and this was May the 5th, it was last week, was the one-year mark of the day that the pile of debris parted ways of this mortal orb. I still miss the scrawny old every day, but we must carry on. This comes from Mama Blanche Debris. And in carrying on, we are going gaily forward to the fourth annual debris debacle in DePaila's memory this coming Sunday, May the 6th at 4 p.m. at Mary's, naturally. As Joel Eisenhower, also known as DePaila Debris, had established, this will be a direct benefit for the PWA campout to help defray costs of the campout, which I believe is the following weekend. Yes, it is. And yes, I'll be there. This will be a sick and twisted show, and as the other three have been, I'm sure, and I hope that everyone who receives this notice will make an effort to try and drop by and revel in the debauchery of my brood. And spectacular guest performers, of course. So, that's going on at Mary's at 4 o'clock, and then we're all going to carpool over to the BRB, because Rose Smith and Jeff Wallace are going to present Stumbelina's Blue Plate Special. And that would be Jeff Wallace dressed as a waitress. Stumbelina. Wait. Okay, a drunk waitress. But that kind of gives you an idea of what the show's going to be like.
Our guest says that's called typecasting.
Oh, I see. Oops. I didn't say that, Jeff. Then Monday night at Mary's Naturally, Montana's movie night, and of course Tuesday is the Jadis de Bonestrada, which is located right here on the ICOH calendar, which was very nice of them. And of course every Wednesday is a jukebox show, and the camp out starts Friday. I will be going up there with a couple of my friends and meeting more friends and all kinds of...
Scaring the hell out of woodland creatures there walking around in your nothingness.
Most likely.
Don't forget to pack your duct tape.
Can I come along?
Huh?
The land of fruits and nuts.
Yes. Yes.
All right.
Do you want to do that one? Would you like to do that one?
Not really.
Okay. Because I want to mention that the sister second... annual softball tournament slated for May the 12th, fields 2 and 3 at Memorial Park, and they welcome the participating teams, the Austin Mullets. Well, that's a good name for a lesbian softball team, isn't it? The MSL Cruisers, Hurricanes and Extremes, Free Agents, Chances and Dirty Dozen, HWSL Sisters.
Third time's a try. Our charm.
Food, drinks, raffle items, and lots of fun in store for you. So, there it is. The Sisters' second annual softball tournament. May the 12th at Memorial Park, fields 2 and 3. And that gets started at...
7 a.m.
They don't tell you?
7 a.m.
7 a.m.
That's definitely a lesbian, not a gay man event.
That's what time they told me to be there.
Are you kidding me?
Well, you know, and we all wear different hats. Being a working for the Gay and Lesbian Yellow Pages, a fabulous publication of 16 years.
Yes, it is.
We're one of the sponsors, and this will be the third time they've tried to put this tournament on because it's been rained out the first two times they've tried so far.
Yeah, that's what they said. Oh, 7 a.m.
Well, that's what time they told me to be there. So
they don't want very many gay men there, do they?
Well,
so if they told you 7, it'll be a 9 o'clock event.
You know me too well, don't
you? Yeah.
Okay. The Houston Pride Band presents Our Favorite Things on Thursday, May 10th, at Resurrection MCC, 2025 West 11th Street. The doors open at 7 p.m. The concert starts at 7:30. Tickets are $10 at the door. For information, check out HoustonPrideBand.org. And remember, if you can beat it, bang it, or blow it, you belong in a band.
That's right, honey. May 10th and May 12th is the Houston AIDS Film Festival going on at our friends over at the Aurora Picture Show at 800 Aurora Street in the Heights. And they kick off the event with a special guest panel of guest speakers who share their personal experience with HIV, followed by the night's feature film, A Closer Walk, by director Robert Bilheimer. And then on Saturday, May the 12th at 7 p.m., the festival continues with introductory speaker Dr. Wayne Sandera of Baylor College of Medicine, followed by two films exploring the global scale of HIV/AIDS. And tickets will be sold at the door for $6 per night. Cool. That's neat. I've been to the Aurora Picture Show. It's a very strange little building. It's kind of very church-like, as a matter of fact. And they kind of take that kind of ambience on. And then May 19th and 22nd, at the Heart of Home, the Bayou City Women's Chorus, Stop in the Name of Love or Music. The Bayou City Women's Chorus will take you to new heights as they sing songs of
five times more love.
Female singers and songwriters. The Saturday, May 19th performance is already sold out. So your next best bet is to get the Tuesday, May the 22nd, 7:30 p.m. at Baring Memorial United Methodist Church, 1440 Herald Street in the Montrose, for a truly amazing and entertaining evening. Yes.
And I thought you were so much better with your tongue than that.
I am, but just not
wrapping it around that particular word. I can wrap it around a lot of things very well, but not that word in particular.
Yes, you can.
Well.
Open mouth, insert foot.
Sweet Mama Cotton sent a little something out our way. You know, I always like to promote Sweet Mama Cotton.
What Kroger is she at this week?
Actually, she is at. She's got a list of Kroger gigs for the month of May. But Saturday, May the 19th, from 8 p.m. until whenever, she's going to be at the at Dan Electro's Guitar Bar at 1031 East 24th Street. Anybody who listens to KPFT for any length of time knows where Dan Electro's is, because a lot of KPFT events happen there. And she will appear with many great Houston musicians in a tribute to Bob Dylan. Dylan's songs all night long. Proceeds go to KPFT Radio and Pat and Rosie's Night Sound. See, what did I tell you? And she is going to be at the Navasota Blues Fest in Navasota on Saturday, August the 11th. That's kind of in the future, but something to think about. Now, her Kroger gigs for the month of May. And later on this today, Sunday, May the 6th, she will be at the Sweetwater Kroger in Sugar Land from 3:30 to 5:30, and she will also be there on Saturday, May the 26th. On May the 12th, she's going to be at the River Oaks Kroger from 3:30 to 5:30. That's River Oaks at West Gray. And Sunday, May the 13th, on Mother's Day, she's going to be at the Kroger at I-10 at Echo Lane from 3:30 to 5:30.
Cool. Did she come out with her new song yet, Paper or Plastic?
No, not yet.
Not yet. Okay.
I'm sure that is on the drawing board, if I know Sweet Mama Cotton. So.
Hey, why don't we talk to him?
Who?
Your guest.
Oh, we have a guest?
The Quickie.
Oh.
You know the Quickie that's supposed to start 15 minutes ago?
Oh, gotcha.
I'm into her.
Yeah.
I get paid by the hour.
Well, he's such a sweetheart. He wouldn't even ever say anything, you know.
Well, see, the problem is this, Jimmy. Well, I'm that much of a bastard. I will.
I'm running my mouth over there talking about everybody else's.
I was listening and learning. That's fabulous. I made notes.
That makes one of us.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. The notes beside on my plan to make the gay Mexican flag.
No, I will. You know, I take no credit, because if you take no credit, then you get no blame, in theory.
Did you learn that as president of the Colts last year?
No, I learned that as the board of another organization. But we won't go there, Jimmy. Thank you. It's good to be back on KPFT 90.1 and 89.5 radio that listens to you. I'd like to thank not only KPFT, but Pacifica for allowing us to come on here and talk to you. And I don't know what's in that coffee.
Stephen Bunch.
If you missed this program, you can check it out tomorrow at kpft.org. You can go to After Hours.
That's
and
right.
You can listen to the uncensored version, because you've lost about 24 seconds so far.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just I put my hand over the dump button just to play it safe.
No. You don't have to worry about that. Dennis Watson isn't here tonight. He's the one you really have to worry about.
Dennis? Oh, no. Well, Dennis couldn't be here tonight.
And neither could Sir Corwin, who is the president this year.
He is the president, and I'm on a self-inflicted hiatus.
Your anus looks just fine to me.
Thank you very much, Jimmy.
Who did you call a homophobe to get a vacation?
Well, I have. I like to read my manifesto now, if I might.
The one you brought or the one I handed to you?
Well, no, it's these two phone books sitting here. I had to use those phone book covers. I just started writing when you were doing your announcements. And
you filled them up.
Yeah. You
know, okay.
I used every matchbook they had at the bar.
Sorry. I wasn't even looking at the time.
I just enjoyed this. And I'm glad you mentioned the debris debacle, because that was for the Colt 45s, and as we are members of the Texas Conference of Clubs.
Yes.
And you know that fabulous land site they have up there.
And I'm going to be visiting it come Friday. Yes, I love that. You know, I went for the first time last fall.
And I'm a city boy. I get nervous when I can't see concrete.
Well, yeah, that's not...
But I had so much fun up there.
Well, and it's odd, they've done a lot of improvements, if there's things. You know, they've cleared a lot out. They have activity weekends. They're not called work. It's
activity. No, activity weekends.
They have put in a new water line, city water line.
Wow.
So they have better water now.
Wow.
They have Wi-Fi on the grounds now.
You're kidding.
Nope. That was underwritten by, they're going to whack me for not remembering this, but it was a 50-50 partnership, and they have Wi-Fi, so if you're up there, there, as of now, it's under our test period, and I've got a lot of feedback, that's probably just me, they have, it's an open system now, and it's gotten so bad, we had the TCC meeting. And we were gathering around for the dinner afterwards from the members after the meeting up there. And somebody said, has somebody seen somebody? They were looking for somebody. He said, well, I saw him online. He must be in his. And I thought, is it going to be like that now? You know, it's a big place, but it ain't that big.
That's right.
You know, it's like, oh, I'll text him for you. It's like, could you just go get him? So, you know, it's just gone down the road already.
But
we'll probably have a webcam hooked up out there.
Oh. Well, you know, I had so much fun last year that I almost forgot to put my shorts back on when the Colts came to serve us lunch on Saturday.
And that wouldn't be a that wasn't a bad thing because we were having cold cuts anyway. So you didn't have to get dressed up for it. That's what I meant. Actually, that
liverwurst
time I
believe with liver spots.
Hey. Gherkin, sir? I mean,
yes.
No, I mean, Dillsbeer. I'm sorry.
Yes, can I just peel off my liver spots and you can make a sandwich?
Would you like some onions to go with those liver spots? Now, hey, we won't talk about that because I won't mention names, but I did get to go see the Emperor's New Clothes, and I'm not mentioning names.
Oh, my.
Love you, O.C. Your Majesty. I believe that particular camp out in honor of Joel, who had just passed, we were serving sloppy Joels.
Yes, sloppy Joels last year.
And I believe we're doing a pasta spaghetti. You know, we did not... Normally, myself, I think backwards. I think of a really good name, and then you have to have the food to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're having pasta lunch. And I am trying to now sell the Colts on, we got a good deal on some beef sirloin tips. And I believe I'm trying to push them to have beef stroganoff and for the fall camp out.
That would be just perfect. Yeah.
With a nice cream gravy.
Oh, yeah.
We just whipped up in the back of the kitchen.
Uh-huh. We have fun out in the woods.
I think we're back on the air. It's been 8 seconds. Anyway, talking about me now.
Yes, let's hear more about you.
Don't forget, you know, a longtime Colt. She does step down or is pushed, you know, depending on who wants the crown. Chanel does step down as Mother Montrose.
That's right.
On Mother's Day, after that camp out.
Right after that camp out. Yeah, we're all going
to
try to get back in time to go to that.
Get in the bread truck and haul buns back to Houston.
I don't even know who's running, to tell you the truth.
I don't know.
Be a big surprise to see who the Mother of Montrose is.
Well, it'd be nice if KPFD had a representative who could run for Mother Montrose. That'd be really good.
That's
if you have anybody who has an experience... doing drag at least once a year at Louis. I have pictures.
I'm retired. I don't do solo acts anymore.
You know, that little schoolgirl, Catholic schoolgirl outfit, you know, you could...
Oops, I did it again sort of thing.
I tried it once solo. I ain't doing solo again.
Oh, come on horrible. Now.
Next time I try and do solo, I did find a lovely purple priest.
Just because
shirt.
You didn't win...
No, the guy who won deserved to win.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Although there was a wardrobe malfunction. If you look in the official portrait there, he did have a wardrobe malfunction.
Hmm. Nice to look at that.
Boy, I missed that picture.
Yes.
That's odd, that normally.
Yeah.
Got the 8x10 glossies, and we're looking at those for in a historical sort of sense.
Of course.
For GCAM.
Yes.
Our good best friends at GCAM, Gulf Cove Archives and Museum.
Yes, and we need money.
Oh, God. We're not just relics, we also collect them.
Yes.
oh, sorry, did I say that?
You know, I feel that way so many times.
I'm waiting for Judy when to call I pick on up, that one.
You know, I,
operator standing by. Sorry, Judy.
I wasn't talking about you.
I
kept some from people, and they're younger than me. Like, oh, my God.
Like, that's difficult to do.
Here, I'll take up all your time, because I've got this long list of things to do.
Yes, please.
Oh, where was I? Oh, June 3rd, Helen Highwater. She sent this note just in. Helen was on the teletype and says that the Colts, I believe this is a fish fry at George.
Ooh.
Because, you know, she, we're still on the, whatever it was, the Nazi code that they used in the World War II. We
Enigma.
Got that really.
Yeah,
and then Enigma, we got, and then Triton after that. Oh, God, that brain hurt. Ow.
Ooh.
That's what they changed to in 43 after they realized the code had been broken. You would think they would have figured that out. But anyway,
I hope you're following this.
Yeah, but anyway,
somewhat.
Okay. I'm high on Dr. Pepper. What can I say?
You got to watch that.
I don't know what these 23 different little things they got
you
in
know,
there. What that stuff is.
You can't drink that warm. It just does stuff to you.
I'm not even going to go there.
Okay.
But it's a fish fry at George. I believe that's at George.
And when is this?
It is June 3rd, Sunday. We're having a fish fry.
Oh.
And any fish that we don't sell, we'll have bobbing for fried fish.
Ooh.
No. No, we will not. That's
yes,
not one of the games.
Yes.
It will tighten the skin a lot better than Botox.
There
would.
You go. We tried bobbing for onion rings at our last run, and it just
bobbing for bobbing for fish at the fish fry. And
well, and if you're going to bobbing for fish, shouldn't that be over at Chances?
And facelifts at the same time. You know, it just works out that way.
Well,
great.
I mean, yeah. Bobbing for fish works better at Chances, I
careful.
Think.
That's when they put in.
No, they're busy with the sushi bar across the street.
Yeah, because they've got the bar, and then they're going to put in the casino in the front part of the bar.
See?
So they have the, well, it's the bar in the front, the casino is going to be in the back, and it's liquor up front and poker in the rear and that sort of thing. I think this, whatever it is, but it's something like that. Anyway.
Oh, that's so old.
I just
laughed
walked
it right
into
up.
It.
Yes.
Southern Country, our BRB brothers, don't forget them. If you've never been to the BRB, and if you've read the article, you know, come into the BRB and ask them, what's the ding-dong deal about the article in the gym about the BRB, the bar moving? Ask them about the bar moving.
Did the bar miss?
That was what was in, I'm not going to mention names, Henry.
What the hell are they painting it for if they're...
Well, you know, that was the rumor that the bar will be moving.
Well, I don't think that's...
Well, a bar will be moving. I'm going to ruin it for anybody.
Okay.
Because there's some secret stuff going on after dinner party that I'm not allowed to say anything about because I heard it third, fourth, fifth hand, something like that.
Okay.
But it's okay. He was intoxicated at the
gotcha.
Time, so I believe every word.
Mm.
Yeah, but they, if you've never been to a BRB on Thursdays, they get 25, 30, 45 people there on a Thursday night. They'll give you free dance lessons from 8:30 until 10:30.
Yeah.
Spinning the hits and just dancing the night away. It's just a fabulous group, and it's just a lot of dancers.
Yeah.
And just come out and have lots of fun.
And you don't have to... The whole idea is learning to dance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's dance lessons, so don't feel like you have to be a really good dancer to go out there.
Right. At 8:30, they have three specific lessons. They start off with an advanced, an intermediate, and a beginner. And the
mm-hmm.
beginner is a line dance or something nice. You don't have to have a partner,
mm-hmm.
but it starts progressively at the beginning of the month, and it goes throughout the month, and they'll have a little refresher course that that week over what's been done before, so you can kind of jump in a little bit. But, you know, if you start at the beginning of the month, you get the whole
So the real starting is at the beginning of the month. I'd have to come the week before then.
Yeah, but the line dances are pretty easy. They like it to be not as challenging for people, but they want to have fun and get out on the dance floor.
Yeah.
It's real nice. If you saw, like, Boy Darren's show, he is the bomb, Boy Amatras.
Yeah.
Last night at the BRB, they had the Southern Country performed, and they were just fabulous.
They are incredible.
To see, you know, to remember that you have a gay dance, country western dance group.
Yeah, and they're professional.
Yeah, they go out with the Eagle Wiggle, which I can't remember. I'm a member and I should know. It's the International Gay Lesbian Association. Mm-hmm. I know I slayed that, but they go every year because they have not only the Southern Country, but they have the Lariats, which mm-hmm. is their competition team. And last year, they pretty much won every event.
First no, I did
second.
Not know that.
Yeah, see, that's what they don't, you know, they don't toot the horns enough because they just slayed the competition.
They really need to.
They had five or six categories. I know David and or Eric will correct me about this, but five or six categories when they won first or second or both, you know, of everything. We've got some really good country western dancers here that just knock it out. So they're really darn good.
Because usually it's, you know, I think of like somebody from Dallas is, you know, taking off the awards and stuff.
Well, Houston's back,
like,
you know,
that.
back in the day.
We're
and
back.
That would date me, but you remember the day where Houston ruled the Western
absolutely.
World.
Absolutely.
But there's a new sheriff in town.
Yeah, we see.
So other than that, and we were talking about don't forget those bears because they asked me, you know, that we're good buds and they help us out a lot.
Oh, like, absolutely.
That darn bear watch on May 18th through the 20th.
That's right.
And I ain't cleaning the pool this year. But they have a fabulous, I think they're pretty darn close to sold out on that, but it's a really great event. And
I think last time I saw it was under 25 memberships left.
Ooh. Yeah, it's not very many. Galveston is really hopping with a lot of the groups. We were talking about beach ball.
Yeah.
Circuit party that we were doing through work, and they're starting this off, and they, you know, trying to talk to them to do some little philanthropy.
No, you work for?
Gay and Lesbian Yellow Pages.
Yes, and so.
GayYellow.com.
Yeah.
And we do community stuff. We're getting into that aspect.
Gay and Lesbian Yellow Pages have been around for how long?
16 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
It's not just gay-owned businesses.
I remember the first year, and it was like, this is wonderful.
When it started off with a tweet, it was basically, you know, a few pieces of paper put together, and
but it was still wonderful, because, you know, we never had anything like that.
People ask us, are they all gay-owned businesses? It's like, no, they are gay and or gay-friendly.
Yes.
And I think that's really neat.
And nowadays, it's a big old thick thing. And the book is big too.
7, 8. Love you, Laura. Laura, my boss. I think she's still my boss.
Okay.
It was fun to start working with Galveston and mm-hmm. just see that there's a lot of stuff going on.
So this thing, this new thing going on, it's like a circuit party?
Yeah. They have a lot of experience with the Beach Ball 2007.com.
And when is that happening?
It is Memorial Day weekend. What is that? That is the 25th through the 28th.
Yeah.
And I couldn't tell you the prices. But in just about every bar in Gallatin you can think of, they will be at least one night there. Red Magazine's having their big anniversary.
Wow.
There, it's going to be a blowout. Every bar has a night.
Something like 2,000 tickets have already been sold.
Right at 2,000, if not a little bit over. They've got the Galveston Convention Center. They've got East Beach. And they have the support of the Parks Board as well as the city.
Mm.
The Parks Board, there was a... You know, they've got the caterer license and this, so they can sell their beer on the beach. And they've got a large stretch of East Beach that's just going to be, you know,
rubbed off and party.
Yeah, going to get a lot of sand and
Between your toes and stuff.
But that was nice to see with that and with Houston that that's why I always give you a lot of credit because you get to go out and represent your work.
Sure.
With pride. As well as your personal things you're into, and I think that's really nice to see people that are able to do their businesses, and we run at that. You mentioned Christina earlier.
Yes.
And she's owns a publication as well, and there's a lot of people. Abel has a business, and there's a lot of other people that are able to push the community, and I think that's really good. And I say that, and I know they say, well, what the heck?
No, I think because we have grown. We've grown as a community, and we're able to support.
There's a lot of those businesses that have been able to support the Colt 45s, and that's with Colt 45s, a 501c2 charity, 31 years. And if I would be remiss if I didn't remember to say, our 10th, on June 10th, I was saving the best for last, the Colt 31st anniversary show and awards at the BRB, 7 p.m. You know that means our awards, our fabulous Slut, Drunk, and Bitch of the Year award, as well as the...
Why are you looking at me when you said those three?
I can't see anything. I'm looking right through you. I'm thinking...
Then you got to have some x-ray vision there.
And it's an interesting year because we had that unwritten rule that if you won that award 3 years in a row, and probably somebody has won it several before that, the name would be the award would be named after you.
Oh, I see.
And we came pretty darn close last year, but Rose lost out to that one that starts with a B. So she that said 1, 2, didn't quite make it. And little Donnie is up for the one that starts with the S.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see if that keeps going. As well as we have our Giovanni LeMond.
Yes.
That name rings a bell for a lot of people. Memorial Entertainer of the Year, that's for Colts for their outstanding work in the community as an entertainer. Not just as Colts, but what they go out and go forth to do. And this year we have a fabulous, it's not a new award, but we've kind of renamed it.
Yeah.
It is, each year we give out the Colt 45 of the Year Award.
Mm-hmm.
And this year it has been, by proclamation, the Colt 45 is renamed the Glenn C. Smith Memorial Colt 45
Very
of the
nice.
Year. If you knew
Very
Glenn Smith,
nice.
And Glenn was just active and a hoot, and Glenn was one of the reasons I joined the Colt 45s, and with his passing, and we love you, Glenn. We love Gene. It was apropos.
Yes, it is.
So
yes,
it's going to be a fun night, and we are going to hand out, starting next week, the Bears, because we were quietly saying that to people. We had this weird idea. It is our theme is the bear necessities, and we are handing out some teddy bears if people want to like decorate them or anything like
Ooh.
That.
Dress them, decorate them.
Stanley will be out of town that weekend, I think.
I'm sure he will.
So if anyone wants to raise a whole bunch of money for the Colt 45s, put one all in pink. Somebody will buy it.
Oh, my God, yes.
We have some very nice teddy bears. They're not too big, not too small, just right.
Just right.
That have been graciously donated, and we figured out what the heck we can do with these, and we will proceed to go to the Colt 45s as well as our clients and... lots of needy people and other organizations out there. We support not only organizations in Houston, but I know here's my segue and I'm babbling, but we accept clients for our AIDS Trouble Fund for Houston, the surrounding counties, Conroe, as well as the Galveston, Texas City.
Sure.
We have clients out there, too.
Yeah.
We accept them. We don't get them a lot, but we're talking with the undercurrent and starting to, like I said, that's where that work sort of bleeds over into your personal life. It's really neat to say, you know, it would be nice to be able to help people here, too. And don't forget that we may not be centered in Galveston, but we're a resource that they can utilize as well. And we always work very well with the service providers, be they Legacy or Bearing Omega or Thomas Street or Donald R. Watkins. I'm going to miss somebody, but they're all just fabulous, and they keep us in their mind whenever they have a client that's in need, and that's what keeps us in business and helps them keep their clients the best they can until things can work out with the larger providers.
Great.
As well as KPFD. I can't thank you both and everybody enough for allowing us to come in here and talk about serious subjects sometimes, and sometimes just to give a little bit of press to us as well as our fellow organizations.
Listen.
And thank you, Chris. Thank you, Jimmy.
I think the Colt 45s is probably the most distinguished and looked up to organization that we have in the gay community.
I learned that really the hard way when I joined. You know, you joked about the kilt. I went out other places, and I know it's, if you've seen the big old goofy cowboy hat, that's what I started wearing. And I blame some of that on Glenn Smith, because at the first meeting, I just don't get me on my rant. But we are not a total cowboy western style, but you know, that's been our theme of the western theme, and there's some underlying things within the organization that where we got our idea for some of our
charity work, mm-hmm. but we couldn't have done any of it without the people that, the 14 members that formed this back in 1976, wow. and Danny Villa,
yeah.
who came up with the fabulous idea of people with AIDS helping people with AIDS, as well as the community helping those people with AIDS. And that's where we get our AIDS Trouble Fund.
With his boxes in the bars, and they're still there.
Mm-hmm.
I always drop some pennies in or whatever I have in my pocket, you know, when I see one of those boxes.
And you were talking about being the old. I'm not that old yet, but, you know, it was this. People don't remember that the most important thing we had to fight was the clap back then.
Yes. Yes. Wow. That's been a while.
Okay. We're fighting the clap using the clapper.
Stop. Take us away, Chris.
Well, I thought this was Cinco de Mayo, and unlike Jimmy, I actually found Spanish music in his box to play rather than an Armenian singing an Italian song.
Jimmy was something Spanish in his box.
Mi vida loca.
It's Italian. It's an Armenian bisexual porn star singing Italian.
Well, there's a lot of Hispanic people who sing that song.
Yeah, I know. And they're, you know, they're less out than Jeff Stryker was. By the way, that's who we're speaking to. The second song was Jeff Stryker.
Yes.
Singing My Vida Loca. The first song, for those of you who weren't here last week, including Jimmy, Josh Duffy.
Bitter Buddy.
What? I know it.
I Will Love You.
Yeah, that's the dancey song he's got on that CD. I really love that CD. There's so much. I want to play Truth off of that later on in the show.
I see a light flashing.
I wanted to open the hash segment with Truth, but I don't think they're here.
I don't know. I stepped out there earlier, and Brendan was waving some sort of wire thing, and something about somebody on a bicycle. I don't know. So
sounds kinky.
Yeah. Well, to the Spanish song that I found.
Yes.
We're going to be playing Dime que eres gay.
Tell me that you're gay.
Well, once I wake up the damn CD player.
By M Songs.
Tell me, man to man. Tell me, man to man.
This is KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, 89.5 Galveston. And apparently I can't read because I played the English pop version mix. And I said I was going to be playing the Spanish version. So while we're wasting a little bit of time, we'll be coming up with a post-hatch segment. Here it is, what I promised before. The Spanish version, Dime que eres gay. And this is After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude on listener-sponsored commercial-free Pacifica Radio for the Gulf Coast, KPFT Houston.
Es la verdad. Con
el día que el destino escogió.
Dime que eres gay by M Songs in honor of, well, supposedly being Cinco de Mayo. Well, some people think we're the 6th on Sunday, so Cinco, siete.
Seis.
Seis. Look, I know enough Spanish to get me in trouble. Yo tengo un lápiz, mi lápiz es amarillo.
Okay, I have no idea what you just said.
I have a pencil. My pencil is yellow.
Okay.
I like using that line in the chat room when it starts using a lot of Spanish words. Throw that line in there, and the people who are speaking Spanish don't get it. All the gringos who took high school Spanish, they start laughing. It's time for our hat segment, and tis the season, because, you know, it is prom and graduation and finals and all that other stuff. We're out of hatchlings.
Yes. But we actually have a very special guest here tonight, and it's kind of a special hat show, I guess you'd say.
They're not blocking you out, so you can get closer to the mic.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess that's right. I'm used to being all the way on the other end of the studio. It's a special night for our hatch segment. We have Brian here, who was a co-host of the hatch segment for how long?
I don't know. Some time, though.
Yeah, I think it was close to 2 years or maybe more.
Perhaps, yeah.
So, and you were also co-president of Hatch for many years.
Yes, I was co-president of the steering committee for some time, and before that I was a member, and I don't remember exactly how long it was, but it's been a while.
Right.
And so.
And you were, how long were you with Hatch? How old were you when you started?
I was 14.
Wow.
So, I think it was about 6 years and 8 months that I went to Hatch.
Wow, that's a long time. And you've actually been out of Hatch now for 2 years, right?
Yes, I just recently turned 23. So
wow, well, congratulations.
Thank you.
So tonight's show is going to be Life After Hatch.
Okay.
So, and you are our guest of honor.
Well, just for those of you who aren't familiar with me, I'm Brian Wissandles, and as Brendan said, I was the co-president of Hatch for some time, and I have been out of Hatch for about 2 years. And shortly before I left Hatch, I decided to get more involved with PFLAG, and so I've been involved with them for some time.
Right.
I also, I'm now one of their facilitators. So on occasion I will facilitate a small group at PFLAG, and you know, so there's you know, just so we have a variety of gay men and lesbians as well as parents in charge, and I've also been part of Global for about 2 years also.
What's Global?
Global is the Gay, Lesbian, or Bisexual Alliance at the University of Houston. We're the GLBT student group there, and we eschew the use of the acronym preferring, because Global is more inclusive to people who are transgender, and we have a lot of people who are transgender that go to Global.
All right, and we did the same thing with Hatch.
Right. So, and I've been very involved with them. I was their treasurer for a year, and then their webmaster, and that my term as webmaster will end in August. So,
okay.
I've been busy with them and getting things done for them, so that's been pretty much my life in the gay community recently.
Okay.
And I've been dabbling in a few things here and there, but other than that, it's pretty much Global and PFLAG.
Well, I'm curious, what role do you think Hatch has played in your life today and since you left to kind of prepare you for who you are now?
Well, I think Hatch has given me a lot of confidence. When I first went to Hatch, the first four times I said nothing but my name. So, and one of the facilitators said, Brian, stop talking so much. And so that was, you know, it gave me more confidence to be who I am and to be more sociable with people. It also gave me a terrific nickname, Brian with Sandals.
Yeah. Well, for a while there, you were Brian Barefoot.
Yes, or Brian without sandals.
Or Brian without.
I still enjoy going barefoot on occasion, but and I think it gave me a lot of opportunities to become involved in the gay community that I might not have otherwise had, and it gave me. I don't know if saying something to fight about is the something to fight for is the right thing, but it gave me some way for me to be involved in helping better the community and society at large.
It awakened your social conscience.
Yes.
Consciousness. I think Hatch does that for several people several youth that have been involved. They've gone on to do other things, big things.
Yes.
Tara is one person who comes to mind.
Yes.
Who I think benefited a great deal from Hatch and went on to really do some special things and continues to.
Right.
So let's walk down memory lane a little bit.
Okay.
So through your years with Hatch, what are some of the things that you remember that stood out as being defining moments, or if not maybe defining, certainly something that influenced in or brought you out as a person or as a gay man or whatever the situation may be?
Well, I think that I was involved for a time with a joint program of Hatch and the Montrose Counseling Center before they merged. It was called HAY, HIV Education for Youth, and that gave me an opportunity. Basically what they did is they chose to educate us, and we became peer educators. We went out and spoke at schools and other locations about HIV and how to prevent it.
You know, what were your what were some of the things that you encountered when you went to schools to talk about HIV prevention? What were some of the things you heard from the youth?
Actually, I found that there was a lot of accurate information that was being provided. Some of the students had that information, the accurate information, and some didn't. And so I think we provided a lot of information to them, and I think also we heard things like that HIV can be transmitted through saliva, which it can't, mm-hmm. Or at least not less than a gallon or so, which
right.
is kind of gross.
Yeah, that's that's a whole other issue.
Right, but so there was a lot of misinformation, okay. and I think that we helped dispel that misinformation.
Yeah, that's great. Were you surprised at any of the questions, or did you get anything that caused you concerned?
Not while I was doing HIV, not while I was doing Hay. I did get an interesting question, which I suppose is quite reasonable. Back when I was, I did other outreach with Hatch, one time to a sex education class at a church. And
oh, that's progressive.
Yes, the Unitarian Universalists are the ones who have the program along with, I think, the United Church of Christ. And basically, the idea was, the person asked, did it hurt the first time you had sex? And so that was, it was a logical question, but one that I was unable to answer, so someone else answered that. But, you know, I'm glad that someone was brave enough to ask that question.
Yeah, that's...
And I think it's a reasonable question.
Yeah, sure.
So, actually, the questions were written down on index cards, and then they read them out such that nobody would have to be feel embarrassed about asking questions.
Right. And that was with Hay.
No, that was with another outreach opportunity with Hatch. It wasn't with Hay.
Okay.
But I think it was still it was interesting in that I hadn't thought people might ask that. But looking back, I think it's very reasonable.
Sure.
With Hay, I didn't. You know, I had anticipated all the questions, so none of them really stand out to me.
Right. You know, you had a lot of opportunities to represent Hatch in the community, not only the GLBT community, but the wider community as a whole. So you kind of became the face of Hatch for a while.
I think there's some truth to that. You know, I was very consistent in my attendance, and I was fairly involved with the community, and even unofficially just kind of showing my face at different GLBT-related functions. So I think that I was kind of the face of Hatch.
Sure. What was... did you have any celebrity moment where you were like, wow, I can't believe I'm doing this?
Not really.
Well, that's interesting, because I think there have been a couple times. If I remember correctly, you were in the Chronicle. You had an article where it was more or less centered around you and some of the quotes that you gave, and I believe your picture even appeared.
I'm told it did. It appeared in the local section for the Montrose and Midtown area, since I didn't live in that area at the time, and I still don't. I didn't actually get to see it. But
oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, I think there was a copy that I might have eventually gotten to see, but it was, yes, I did, I was, you know, talked to by the Chronicle, and I also actually appeared in Outsmart once.
I think I remember that. Were you on the cover?
No, I think I was in the Faces of Pride section.
Okay.
There were some other Hatch youth that were on the cover.
Okay. What was the article about in the Chronicle?
I think my experience in school, I don't exactly remember.
Sure.
It's been a while.
Many interviews later.
Well, as I like to say, I'm getting kind of old. You know, I'm 23. You know, I can see rolling eyes. But
I'm sympathetic to that.
I always enjoyed my time at Hatch, and there are a lot of enjoyable things. I also got to speak at an HIV prevention conference in 2000 for HISD.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh wow! You know, HISD did a lot of things with Hatch.
They did.
They had quite a few collaborative programs and ventures going on. Tell us a little bit about that one.
Well, it was kind of an information fair kind of thing. So I was at the Hatch booth, and we provided information about Hatch and about how Hatch, what benefits Hatch provides as far as HIV education and as well as HIV prevention, because it's been studied that youth who attend programs like Hatch are much less likely to get HIV because they have something to do.
Right.
And they have good role models and good peer relationships that encourage healthy behavior.
Right. And it was that whole program is more than just the facts. This is what you do, this is what you don't do, these are the risk factors. And, part of that education, correct me if I'm wrong, was role-playing how you negotiate safe sex with a partner.
Right. Not only negotiating how you might have safe sex or how to discuss it and talk to your partner about it, but also we also studied good relationship skills. What's important to, how do you have good relationship skills such that you don't feel pressured into having sex, such that you and your partner can decide when that time is right for you, and that your relationship has good strengths other than perhaps just sex.
Right. And do you ever get the feeling that some of the work you did may very well prevent somebody from getting HIV or some other STD or even in a dangerous situation?
I like to think so, because the thing with prevention is if you prevent something bad from happening, you never know whether it would have happened.
Right.
So we can statistically say that it is likely that I prevented someone, but I can never really know. And so you have to hope that good things are happening because of what you do.
I think that's one of the powerful things about volunteering for a cause or being involved in something that's bigger than yourself and trying to get the word out, whatever that might be. And I think that surely speaking to youth about HIV prevention and negotiating safe sex or not having sex or those type of things have a huge impact on people.
I think they do. I think not only the people who receive the information, but the people who present it. I was, when I was doing hate prevention at a school in the Houston area, I was surprised to know that a lot of students did have accurate information. And I was also surprised, I was a little bit less surprised at some of the questions that people were, that some of the things people were misinformed about, but I was still, the audience seemed receptive, and that was probably because they all wanted to be there in that session.
Right.
And I thought that was great, because it provided me information, it said people really care about their sexual health and about having good relationships.
Right. And unfortunately, you have the group or the population that may not have been there that don't know what they don't know. May or may not be getting the good information or not. But hopefully, as you touch those people who were in attendance, they'll go out and touch other people.
Right, or at least encourage their friends and their peers to seek accurate information. And maybe they'll share those good skills with others. I know I've shared some of those techniques with my friends.
Right. That's good. That's interesting. You've actually, in private conversations, that's come up.
Yes. For some reason, I get continually asked, especially by straight men, about relationship advice, which I think is quite odd. But
that's great.
I think is very odd, but because I don't think I'm better at that than anyone else. But I always kind of turn it around and say, well, what would you do? How would you feel if you were in this situation? And I think I've learned some of that from Hatch and some of that from my friends who went to Hatch, such as Justin. In group, he would always make a practice of, instead of giving an answer to someone's question, well, what do you think you should do? What if you did X? What if you did Y? And then making that person reason out their line of thought and what they were going to do.
Right.
Which was much more effective than saying, do X or do Y.
Right, right.
And so I think that, it's kind of putting someone in their own position, or even things such as the wants, needs, and expectations thing. What do you want out of this relationship? Mm-hmm. What do you need and what do you expect out of it?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think those are good skills that anyone could use. And, most of my friends are people like me who I think have their heads more or less on straight or gay, as you could say it. But so I think they're more likely to listen to it than someone who maybe isn't, who might not have those, there are some people who are less inclined,
right.
I think.
What skills do you think you got out of your Hatch experience?
Well, I think the ability to become more sociable in public speaking. I think is...
Yeah, you've come a long way from the kid who sat in the corner and didn't say anything for a month.
Yeah, I think that was, you know, I've become, as you said, I've come a long way. I think I've become more interested in social justice and doing things.
Do you think Hatch played a part in that, or do you think that was pre-wired in you already?
I think Hatch played a part in that. My family, especially my mother, are very involved in social justice and fighting for things that we believe in. And I think there's some church aspects to that. My church is also very involved in those. So I think that there's a lot of good influences that have all come together, and Hatch is one of those.
Right. How do you see that manifested in your life today, that social activism that sparked in you?
Well, I think that even though I've left Hatch, I'm still involved in the community, and that I speak about the things that I feel strongly about, and even if it's not in a, you know, in a formal setting, I still speak to people about the things that I feel strongly about and about my values, and try to affect change because it's the right thing to do.
Right. Do you think being involved with Hatch, and because you were leadership, you had leadership positions in Hatch, and you were definitely one of the more eager volunteers, and like I said, the face of Hatch for some time, do you think that kind of helped you make that next step out of Hatch when you graduated out and you sought other organizations to be involved with?
I think it did. I think if I was very involved and I was willing to volunteer, then my skills were more in demand, because mm-hmm. if you're willing to take something and run with it, then people are obviously interested in someone who's going to take initiative. And so I think that was good. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a lot of those skills they just kind of naturally fell over into other things I did.
Right. You know, one of the things that we wanted to accomplish with Hatch, since I've been involved in, actually I got to do several things to promote this, is instill in the youth this idea of volunteering and being a part of a cause and being a part of the community. I think the bars, I think the clubs, I think dancing and all that play an important part, especially when you reach a certain age. And it certainly has its place, but I think there's more to it. And if you can instill that volunteerism, that sense of being in contributing to something bigger than yourself, if you can do that early on in life, I think you're more likely to keep going and keep doing that type of thing. So I know that was one of the things that I had hoped to kind of plant that seed while I was at Hatch. And it's nice to see people like you and Tara and several others, Justin, who have gone on to do, Jeffrey, have gone on to do, you know, pretty big things, considering that, you know, you guys are the age you are, and you know, you're still quite young. I mean, you're young adults, and you guys have done some pretty impressive things.
Well, thank you. I also think that your statement about, you know, getting involved early and teaching those skills early is good. You know, there's that joke about everything I needed to know I learned in kindergarten.
Right.
And so I think, but more accurately, it's in the young years of life, you know, being influenced into doing good things for yourself and for others, and learning good skills, and I think that's important, and I think Hatch really helped me with that.
Right, right. You know, for a lot of gay GLBT youth, they don't have the opportunity to participate or be in leadership roles in the high school experience, and I think that has certainly changed in the last 5 years, or 10 years even, where we're seeing youth that are out who are involved in student council, who are involved in leadership positions, who are openly serving in different various sports or whatever. So in GSAs, for instance, starting those in their schools. So there's more opportunity for an out youth to be in those roles. So that's certainly a good thing. But I think one of the things that Hatch did for you, and maybe some others hopefully, is give youth, GLBT youth, an opportunity to be in leadership roles, to be involved in an organization, to put together a project and work within committees of your own peers. I think that builds skills that you don't normally or necessarily get in high school.
Yeah, I think, you know, it builds important leadership skills and also interpersonal skills. There was a rule on the Hatch steering committee. I won't mention it by name, but it's well known. And the rule was basically that there could not be, you could not add someone to the steering committee that couldn't get along with the members who were already there. Now, in some cases, that meant that we didn't add members who might be very helpful to the steering committee, because one of the current members was might have grated on that person a little bit.
Right.
But I think that it was, we tried to maintain a cohesive group and as much as possible further the goals of Hatch.
Right.
As much as possible. So, and I think that we tried to do that by, first of all, maintaining some sort of cohesion with ourselves, and then running with that towards things like the prom, the pride parade, the float.
You know, you never get away from that. I'm involved in several different boards and different organizations, and it's interesting because you don't want to squash dissent within a group. But then again, it's important for there to be this cohesiveness and that everyone's on the same page and you don't lose track of why you're all there.
Right.
And that happens, unfortunately. But that's interesting that you mentioned that, because I remember there was a time when the steering committee, they were concerned about you joining the steering committee. Do you remember that?
I was not actually aware of that. It was beyond my knowledge.
Okay. Well, I didn't mean to say anything. If I remember correctly, the quote was that Brian, he wants to do a lot of things, so we're just not sure about that.
Well, I mean, and I respect that, you know, I have, I can see, yes, I seem to remember a lot of, you know, a lot of concern about that kind of stuff, and I think I know what you're talking about, and I think there was concern that I had a lot of fairly radical ideas, and part of that was because I didn't understand how the steering committee functioned.
Right.
And so my ideas of how to do things were based on how I thought the steering committee was and not how it really was.
Right.
So I think that there were a lot of things that I would have, that you know, if the steering committee were in my ideal view, then of course I would have done those things.
Right.
And then that wouldn't have been an issue.
Right.
But knowing that the steering committee was the way it was and that it wasn't better or worse, it was just different, I felt that the way things were done was in some cases correct.
Right.
And if there weren't some things that were the way I had to decide, did I want to change those or try to change those, or were they good enough?
You know, there's one thing that I remember that I saw growth in you, and that was the smoking issue, to go back a little bit.
Yeah.
To give the listeners a historical reference, when Hatch was a standalone organization, Hatch allowed there to be breaks, which it was understood that the Hatch youth may want to go and take a smoke break.
Yes.
You know, they were unsupervised to some degree to have the freedom to do that if that's what they wanted to do.
Right.
And when we joined with the Montrose Counseling Center, that then became a big no-no.
Right.
That's something you can't do. And
right.
There was a lot of discussion about if that was going to have a negative impact on Hatch. And it wasn't just you. Several facilitators were concerned about it. Everyone was concerned about it. Because you didn't know if we don't let them smoke, then they're not going to come. If they don't come, then they're not going to get all this good information. And so it was, what do we do with this? So walk us through a little bit about what your thoughts were.
Well, when I first came, you, as you said, there was definitely a culture that allowed that allowed smoking, and there was, it was even understood that when you wanted to, on those breaks, when you wanted to socialize, you would go out and hang with the smokers, even if you weren't. And then when we joined with the counseling center, or actually over the years, it became less and less common that people would go out and smoke, and I think that's just due to changes in the gay culture. So it was that just the smokers would go outside. And then when we joined with the counseling center, that was, as you said, a no-no for many different reasons. And so I was concerned about that, and I rather vehemently opposed it. And I, you know, and I respected the reasons of the counseling center, but I disagreed with them.
Right.
And
there's nothing wrong with that.
Right. You know, and I was fairly aggressive and trying to, you know, display my point of view. And I think that as it went on, and shortly thereafter, we did lose a number of youth. And we gained more youth later that were less likely to smoke.
Right.
It was a different culture that we created.
you know, you did a lot of research on that whole process.
Yes.
And trying to sway people's decisions. Ultimately, it came down to, some respect, MCC is funded through some sources that smoking is
prohibited.
Right, right. And to qualify for those certain funds, that was something that was non-negotiable. And when you tie that with funding and money, it's a hard thing to battle, of course.
Yes.
But I was really proud of you watching you on the sidelines, because you felt strongly about it. You did quite a bit of research. You did some lobbying among your other hatchlings.
Yes.
Not to say that you were a trouble causer. I don't think was it at all. But going through that whole process, I looking back, I think that having the smoking ban is actually the right thing to do.
Yes, I agree that it, from a health standpoint, if nothing else, and personally, I am opposed to smoking. I don't
right.
allow it in my apartment.
Right.
And in fact, I have a little sign that says, "If you're smoking, you'd better be on fire." So, but the you know, the idea is that it wasn't the smoking per se that I thought people should smoke and light up and do that. I actually think that's a bad idea. But I thought that it didn't encourage wise decisions. It encouraged people to follow the rules instead of make their own decisions.
Right. Well, you have a little bit of that libertarian spirit in you.
I do. I do tend to have a little bit of even if it's unwise, people should be able to do it. And I still believe that way.
Right.
But I think what I realized was that we could do much more good with Hatch if we weren't constantly worried about funds. And so there was an upside to it. And the fact that the youth attendance increased, although these were different youth, was also, I think, it kind of assuaged my fears a little bit.
Right, right. And you were also involved with the video.
Yes.
The Turned Up Volume?
Yes. I did participate 1 year in the Turned Up Volume project. That was there were some artists out of New York, Barbara Bickert and James Shelton, who came down and with Diverse Works and Hatch did some video work and performance art, and I actually participated in one of those, and I enjoyed it a great deal.
And that's one of those things that I don't think you or the youth that participating in it would have ever had the opportunity to do that anywhere else.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I mean, that was something that was just so uniquely Hatch.
Yes.
And giving people the opportunity to grow. I mean, And you went through the program, but you scripted out what you wanted to happen. You actually shot video. You did editing. You did the whole thing.
Right. And we also brainstormed our own ideas and helped, and with the artist's help, kind of filtered them down. And we looked at a lot of different, we also did a kind of a threefold poster board that had something we believed in. We did a lot of different work. They all kind of meshed together. And I think I could be wrong, but I think it was What It's Like to Be Gay in America. That could have been the year before. I don't remember.
Right.
But I really enjoyed it, and I think it was a great experience.
Right.
And I still have the DAT tape.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So what is that?
The DAT tape is the digital audio the digital recording tape that you can use to, that we use to tape it. So conceivably, I could take it and redo it again if I wanted to.
Oh, wow.
I don't have the equipment to do that, but conceivably I could.
Okay. Well, what's anything in the plans for you? What are you looking forward to?
I think I'm slowly making my way through college, and I'm still involved with PFLAG, and I intend to be involved with Global, even though I'm not an officer. I might pick up a position come August if there's one open. And I think I'll just probably be involved here and there with different things. I'm, you know, interested in keeping it as part of the gay community.
Right.
And so as things come along, there's been talk about possibly starting a 20-something group similar to Hatch.
Oh, wow.
For 20-something people. So,
you know, there used to be a 20-something organization years ago.
Yes, there did. And it was, interestingly enough, called 20-something.
Oh, wow.
But I...
There was one that was a little more recent than that one, even.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Bering used to have one called Gaydar.
Okay.
That was on for a little while.
So
I forget what the DAR stood for. That's back when I was still eligible to be in a 20-something group.
Well, that's definitely... I think there's a need there.
I think there is, too, because what my friends and I have found, also former Hatch youth, is that there's a lot of good things that Hatch provides. Like, we might like to have a group kind of thing because, you know, sometimes just getting things off your chest is really useful. And also, we're probably going to start off maybe something unofficial and run from there and
okay.
work. So
okay.
I've been involved with, on occasion I'll go to the protests in front of the county clerk's office for marriage. So I'm involved on occasion with that and numerous other things that PFLAG does. So, I try to stay aware. And I've recently become involved in some other stuff, a bicycling group, or a group for kind of bicyclist rights in Houston. I'm trying to stay, around.
Great. What would you like to see out of a 20-something group?
I think I'd like to see something that helps foster a sense of community. It helps build skills and provides both a social and a support kind of aspect, because there are still many 20-something gay people who are not, LGBT people who are not out.
Right.
And I think that, and just kind of a perhaps a place to unload, sometimes a safe place that people can just be themselves.
Right.
And it can be an alternative to the club scene.
Right.
I know, although I don't drink, my friends, when they became 21, were very interested in alcohol, and I can see in many of my friends that that's a very attractive mm-hmm. prospect. But I think that there's much more to the bar. The bars and clubs are fine.
Right.
But in moderation, as everything else.
Right.
And I think that perhaps we could still avoid their kind of just a general purpose 20-something group, just as you have groups for people who are interested in, say, tennis or whatever.
Right.
So it would be kind of a young adults group.
I think Hatch does a lot of things really, really well. Of course, the HIV and health education is the cornerstone to what Hatch does well and the type of benefit it gives Hatch youth. But one of the other things I think it does really well is it gives a GLBD youth an historical reference to where they are in time in the GLBT spectrum. I think there's a lot of training about the history, GLBD history, and not only on the national level, but locally here in Houston. And I think it lets the youth know a lot about the GLBT community as a whole, and the different aspects of that. And PFLAG, definitely one.
Right.
I mean, Hatch and PFLAG have had a close relationship. And some of the other organizations, the GLBT Chamber of Commerce.
Right.
That's also, we forged a very good relationship with them. So hopefully you get a perspective of who you are in the scene.
Right. And also, I think we've always had some sort of presence in the Pride Parade, at least as long as I've been there.
Right.
And so we've kind of learned about the history of Pride and, with why we celebrate it in June because of the Stonewall riots, and why, how Pride used to be a while ago. And plus, with Deb there, Deb is a good historian, so she provides us with a lot of how it used to be in Houston and around the country.
Right.
So there's a lot of... he provides us kind of a when I was young, but not so much that it's overwhelming. Just she makes it interesting, and so you've got a kind of a sense of history of who you are and how we became who we are.
All right, I'll put you on the spot for just a second. Now that you've gone through the Hatch experience, where would you like to see Hatch in 5-10 years from now?
I think that as a 5-10 years, I think perhaps that Hatch has its own kind of drop-in youth center. I think that's been a dream of ours for a long time, And I think that will be a terrific...
Well, we may have that to some degree coming up, since Montrose Counseling Center has the new building that we're about to move into. And Hatch is going to have its own little section of that building that we're going to be allowed to have computers, workstations, display walls, different things like that. And what that may turn out to be is a place for Hatch Youth to come throughout the week, not necessarily just on our Fridays and Sundays, because, you know, we had to rent a spot in the community for us to go to that wasn't our spot.
Right.
So this would actually be our home, and there's a lot you can do when you have your own place.
Right.
So we may actually be close, maybe not exactly a youth center all to our own, but we may actually have something very similar to that.
Well, and that's been kind of the thing that I've been looking for. I know that other groups in other cities tend to have had those and have had great success.
Right.
One of the benefits to having such a youth center is that even if Hatch chooses to have its meetings, its regular meetings somewhere else, that it's still a good way for youth to learn about Hatch.
Right.
Because I know in Chicago, the Horizons Youth Center, people would come there because they heard from their peers who were making inappropriate comments that's where the gay people hang out.
Right.
Of course, that's not the language they use, but the youth who were not yet out knew where to go, and so there's some kind of help for that.
Right.
So I think that's basically my major goal, and I share Deb's goal of that every youth in Harris County will have had the Harris and the surrounding counties actually will have had the opportunity to attend Hatch at least once.
Right. Right. You know, what are some of your fond memories looking back?
I think my fond memories are definitely the Pride Parade and the prom. Also, a lot of the friends that I made one time after Hatch. I know we all went on like a scavenger hunt. We Justin and I set up little notes, and then Tara ended up following them, and we ended up at Herman Park and just hung out. So I think of a lot of those memories I made with my friends, and plus just a lot of the things like turned up volume was always mm-hmm. lots of fun. I remember there was a couple years before me, there was a final essay kind of question about what's it like to be gay, and so people would say it was kind of an interactive kind of thing, and it was funny. And so I think it's those really wacky, weird moments that are lots of fun. As I said, I enjoyed the Pride Parade and the prom and the friends.
Were you on the court for the prom?
I don't believe I was.
What?
I was never on the court for the prom.
I'm sorry. That's an injustice.
I did the year I aged out get an aging out crown, so that was...
But I do remember this, because when I joined the Montrose Counseling Center board, one of the first things I did was create a special Hatch Award, where the Hatch youth who got this annual award would go on the plaque, as this would be the top award for a Hatch youth. If I remember correctly, you were the first person to get that.
I believe I was. I also, at that situation, got to meet Sheila Jackson Lee.
That's right.
Who is currently my congresswoman. And I also, actually, to get me there, Deb had to trick me. She had to say, I need you to speak about something because I can't be there. And because she knew that I wouldn't go there just to accept an award. So I actually kind of enjoyed it. It was humorous.
Right.
And I enjoyed it. It was very nice to be recognized. But I think that the recognition that I got for actually doing things, as far as, the small victories and the small satisfactions, is worth a lot more than having my name on a plaque, perhaps.
Right. I think that's right.
In some sense, doing a job and getting a job well done is its own satisfaction. And I think, I think I tried to do my best for Hatch, and I hope that, I hope that it worked.
Well, I know you brought a lot of really good discussion to the radio show over the years.
Yeah, before the radio show, we were talking about an old discussion we'd had on the radio, and I think it was one of the more vibrant ones, and we had a lot of really, a lot of really lively discussions.
Right.
About all sorts of things. And
I remember some of the ones that religion has come up a lot over the years.
Yeah.
How can you be a quote unquote Christian under the Judeo-Christian ethic and be gay?
Yeah.
And is it possible? And so those have been very lively. I know. And some other discussions over the years.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I can, for example, that question, I couldn't answer it, you know, I can't tell you how to be whoever you are, so you have to come up to, you know, come up with that
right.
for yourself. And I think I think that Hatch Radio discussions might raise more questions than they answer, but I hope that people, it gives people something to think about.
Right. You know, over the years that I've been involved, the personality of the radio show has been vastly different. It's been, we've had a serious group where it's consistently took on the issues of the day and argued those out, which were kind of fun. Those are the ones I actually enjoy the most. And then there were the lighthearted ones, where a lot of tongue-in-cheek and kidding around, and I don't think there's actually a theme or a topic given the whole hour. So it's the personality has changed quite a bit, but you certainly played, when you were a part of the radio show, you played a big part in that personality.
Well, thank you.
And you really did. You brought a lot of interesting facts and relevant information, and I think you challenged people within the group, as well as people who listened out there in radio land.
Well, I think part of that's due to the middle school I went to. We had a lot of Socratic discussions, so you really didn't have you had to defend everything you believed in or you claimed, so it's kind of, you know, I just kind of ran with that.
Right.
So,
right.
Of course, you want to challenge, you want to ask questions and bring ideas, so.
Sure. Well, that's, I think Hatch also helped bring some of that out, and I think you're remembered for that, actually.
Well, thank you.
No doubt. So, anything else?
Well, for those people who might be listening and who might be interested in Hatch, we'll give you the telephone number you can call. That's 713-529-3590. And then there will be a thing that says, if you want to, you know, attend a Hatch meeting, press whatever and do that. And that number, one more time, is 713-529-3590. And you can also look up Hatch on the web at www.hatchyouth.org. I'd like to remind you that our prom is coming up. I believe it's June 8th.
Mm-hmm.
At the historic Magnolia Ballroom from 7 to midnight. So it's free to youth under 21, and for those 21 and over, it is $25.
Right, and I think we're actually limiting the number of over 21 tickets that we're selling to that event, which I think is a good idea. You always want the majority of those participating in that Hatch Prom to be
Hatch Youth.
Hatch
yes.
Youth, that's right. Or any youth, as you pointed out. You don't
right.
have to necessarily have gone to a Hatch meeting
right.
to come to the prom.
Right. And many Hatch Youth, or many GLBT youth who might ordinarily not have been able to go to their prom, come to the Hatch Prom, even if they haven't been to Hatch before.
You know, I think we get maybe 25% participation in the prom from people who have never done anything else with us before. And we get a good draw, I think.
Yeah, I think that's part of it, probably fairly accurate.
And then, of course, the Pride Parade.
The Pride Parade will be coming up, but I don't need to tell you when that is because I'm sure you already know, and I don't really remember when it is, so I couldn't tell you accurately.
That would be June the 23rd.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Jimmy. It will be June the 23rd then, and I'm sure you can find more at the Pride Committee's website.
Sure. And that's another thing, that you don't have to be a Hatch youth to march with us, actually.
Right. Although I understand it's encouraged to help build the float, and people who have helped build the float will get first priority.
That's right. That's right. And a few years ago, Hatch actually won one of the awards.
Yes, I remember that.
Right. That was kind of neat. I think, which one was it? I think it was the
best,
most in, yeah, best message.
Yeah, best message,
theme,
I think.
Or,
yeah, I think that was it. I think that was a year after I aged out, but I agree that it was a very good message.
Yeah, it was.
So,
I think it was, what was it? Let me see if I remember the little...
Was it Stop the Second Wave, I think it was?
Well, that was part of the little little banners that people would carry.
Okay.
And I think that's actually why we won, because people would put different things about HIV or about crystal meth use, which at that time, and maybe still now, that's been a big problem within the youth or the GLBT community as a whole. So there were different messages like that. And on our main banner, or on the actual float, I think it was gay, straight,
black, white, struggle, same fight,
yeah,
I believe it was.
That's it.
Yeah, aged out shortly before they went ahead and finished that up. So
right.
We had all those flowers. And
oh, yeah.
Those were annoying.
For those of you who didn't know, we made little plastic flowers, and then we put them on chicken wire. So you had this big, I guess, billboards of some sorts. And so we had to put all those little flowers, and we were worried that we weren't going to get all that on there.
It was basically a continuous thing at every Hatch meeting for that... portion of the...
For like 4 months straight.
Yes.
I think people were sick of those flowers.
Oh, yes. I know I was. And that was only in April when I aged out. So that was definitely, you know, I'm sure they were very sick of it.
Right.
Anyway, I think we'll leave back to Jimmy now, so...
Well, Brian, thank you very much, and good luck to you.
What a wonderful segment. Thank you two very much. It's not often that we just let you go because you were doing so well.
Well, you know, I've referred to different hatchlings as legend, hatch legends.
Mm-hmm.
And Brian is definitely a Hatch legend.
Absolutely.
I mean, everyone who was involved in Hatch the years that he was involved, if you ask them to name someone that they remember or that influenced them, I would be willing to bet the majority of them would name Brian as their number
mm-hmm.
one person.
You would be correct in that.
Well, thank you. It's nice to know that I'm remembered.
Oh, you are.
And for something good, not for something bad.
Right. I think you're also one to watch. Brian is definitely one to watch for in the coming years.
I think so. I think so, too. Good luck, Brian.
Thank you.
And we're going to go to some music. Chris has picked some... what did you pick?
I don't know. Which one do you want to play, CD1 or CD2?
I've got my finger on CD1.
Oh, okay. It's Jim Vareros.
Oh.
The American Idol contestant.
Yes.
I forget what the name of his song is.
It's number 7.
Yeah.
Which would be You're Getting Crazy. And it's got a...
Spanish subtitle.
Yes.
It's here. We have hard enough time with English tonight.
Yeah, tonight.
Estás elocuendo. Sequendo, something like that.
Okay, let's go to it.
Rolling low, can you feel it? My body on the floor.
I need ya, I got fire, you're running through my veins. Baby, hurt me, don't you deserve me. I need you to hurt me, bring the pain. You wanna get it, but can't take it. Baby, shake it, I shake it, but don't break it. I know that you're dangerous when you're naked. It's my single kiss, even though. Wanna get it, but can't take it. Baby, shake it, but don't break it. I know that you're dangerous when you're naked. It's my single kiss, even though. Shake your body rough, move your hips slow. You make me crazy, but you just don't know. Whip it up, take it down. The power to be upside down.
Don't you
think you're
shaking?
Yeah. You give me fever like a velvet fire. Just keep it going and I'll take you higher. You burn me up with a toxic desire. Get up, get on, and feel the fire.
You wanna get it, but can't take it. Baby, shake it, but don't break it. I know that you're dangerous when you're naked. You're dangerous when you're naked. It's my simple kiss, even though. You wanna get it, but can you take it? Baby, shake it, but don't break it. I know that you're dangerous when you're naked. It's my simple kiss, even though. Wanna get it, but can you take it? Baby, shake it, but don't break it. I know that you're dangerous when you're naked. It's my simple kiss, even though. Wanna shake your body rough, move your hips slow. You make me crazy, but you just don't.
Del mar donde el viento da la brisa al despertar. Estás tan triste como un desierto que pasa por las lágrimas que llevas dentro. El problema no fue nacer ahí, la solución será si cambiarás al fin. Aún hay tiempo, todavía existís. Me sentiré orgulloso si te veo feliz. Aunque la distancia nos ha afectado, no pierdo la esperanza de estar a tu lado. Deseo ver las calles en la juventud, la oportunidad de una nueva virtud, yeah.
Este es un tributo a mi tierra.
Todavía hay recuerdos de nuestra nación, por eso te dedico esta canción.
Este es un tributo a mi tierra.
El momento más difícil se superará, el llanto y el miedo se borrará.
Este es un tributo a mi tierra.
Todavía hay recuerdos de nuestra nación, por eso te dedico esta canción.
Este es un tributo a mi tierra.
El momento más difícil se superará, el llanto y el miedo se borrará.
Si el cielo pudiera extender mis líneas, mi voz revive extensas orquídeas. No tengas miedo a ser derrotado, nada ha sido hecho sin ser violado. El tiempo que llevas siendo pobre, gastas tu amor, se pierde el cobre. Marcando el nombre de nuestra nación, cargando el alma, no tengo opción.
Este es un tributo a mi tierra.
Todavía hay recuerdos de nuestra nación, por eso te dedico esta canción.
Este es un tributo a mi tierra.
El momento más difícil se superará, el llanto y el miedo se borrará.
Este es un tributo a mi tierra.
Todavía hay recuerdos de nuestra nación, por eso te dedico esta canción.
Este es un tributo a mi tierra.
El momento más difícil se superará, el llanto y el miedo se borrará. Tal vez la violencia te ha maltratado, por terremotos la gente te ha abandonado. El trauma es grande, quitando valor. Después de hacer fuerzas escurre el sudor.
Pasan los días y sigue sufriendo. Da lástima ver a muchos muriendo. ¿Quién cuida el torpe si sigue teniendo el mismo error de siempre? No entiendo.
Lucha para poder engrandecer. Encuentra la luz que te permite escoger. Busca el camino, la felicidad. Piensa en el futuro, en la prosperidad. Salvador y el mexicano, every centroamericano, Salvinex, con unión aquí estamos.
Este es un tributo a mi tierra. Todavía hay recuerdos de nuestra nación, por eso te dedico esta canción. Este es un tributo a mi tierra.
El momento más difícil se superará, el llanto y el miedo se borrará.
Este es un tributo a mi tierra.
Todavía hay recuerdos de nuestra nación, por eso te dedico esta canción.
Este es un tributo a mi tierra.
El momento más difícil se superará, el llanto y el miedo se borrará.
Este es un tributo a mi tierra.
Mi tierra.
Gets quiet there.
What was that?
Tributo a la mi tierra by Salvamex.
And that's off of
the Homo Revolution Tour CD.
Oh, okay.
I played De La Cruz last. Yeah, last week when Miss Money was here. So before that was Jim Varos with You're Getting Crazy, and however you say that in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
On that. Since, you know, we claim to be a Saturday show and it is Cinco de Mayo.
And it's the top of the hour.
And you're listening to After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude on listener-sponsored commercial-free Pacifica Radio for the Gulf Coast, KPFT 90.1 FM, 89.5 Galveston, and always the World Wide Web at kpft.org.
And those of you who have listened to After Hours for any length of time know that we don't exactly stick to a rigid time schedule around here. So,
it's about right for when
I know. So things run a little late, and running a little late tonight is the Binet segment.
Hello.
Hosted by David Great Bear.
Hi.
And Robin.
Hello.
Hello, hey. Robin.
It's the bisexual agenda.
Yes.
As we call it.
And you've got a little bit of everything to talk about. I think you were wanting to ask people to call in and ask questions about bisexuality.
Plus,
you wanted to talk about a warrior weekend.
Yeah, I'll spend a few minutes talking about that.
Yes,
and of course, invite people to call in and participate. Get this exchange of energy and information going here.
And this would be good practice for them because next week we will be in Fun Drive.
Oh yes.
Uh huh.
So give early and give often.
Yes, and
we'll be in Fun Drive. Jimmy will be in the woods.
Yes, I will. So, what is that number?
It's
713-526-5738.
That's right.
And it's 713-526-KPFT.
Otherwise known as Jam KPFT.
That's right.
So, I just have, you know, don't really have any particular agendas, you know, despite the name, agenda for tonight, so kind of wing it. Mm-hmm. Got Big Roy sitting in here with us tonight.
I
guess he'll talk about his experience with bisexuality. Yeah, right.
Buying it.
Yes.
B-Y, not right. B-I.
You really? Mm-hmm. Anyway. Yeah, let's see. Let's go and start out. Just talk a few minutes. What Jim was talking about, a warrior weekend. Something I've talked about on the show a couple times. I'm involved with a national, in a way, international group, the parent organization called the Mankind Project, and they sponsor these weekend retreats for men called the New Warrior Training Adventure. And it's simply, it's just simply an opportunity for men of whatever orientation to get together, kind of go off to a place where you kind of spend some time, kind of just, you know, take a look at your life. Maybe there's stuff going on that you need to deal with. You know, we got guys, men who go through, maybe are involved with 12-step programs or they're dealing with other issues in their life. But there's also a lot of men who, you know, things are basically going fine. Just say, hey, look, here's an opportunity, maybe take some time off, just kind of go and look at some things, kind of get a better sense of what's going on with them at this time. And the good, you know, the process is open to all men. And as things go, it's probably the majority of men who go through are straight, but there is a large number of gay men who have participated in this, these processes and are involved with them, you know, continuing these processes. The idea being that once someone has done one of these weekend retreats, they have an opportunity to go back and staff one of those weekends. And the Houston community does these things probably about once a month, and then there's other communities around the country. There's a group up in the Dallas area starting to sponsor these retreats. There's, I just found out, a group of men in Austin are starting to go through the process of creating their own center, their own kind of little community. They'll probably start sponsoring them. Again, there's other groups around the country to do these things.
What all happens at these retreats?
Basically, well, you know, don't really want to get into all the details, but, you know, basically it is, you know, the men come to the place we have this some land we own up near Madisonville. It's got some cabins and other places, you know, showers and all that, you know, comfortable setting. And again, we just, you know, give a chance to go through, and there'll be various processes, exercises men can go through to look at things that are going on in their life, various exercises. And, you know, it's very, to me, it's a very powerful experience. I did one of these weekends back in July 2000, and I've been involved with it ever since. I've done staffed one of these gatherings back last month in April, and that was my, you know, 13th time I've done it. So there's other men who have been doing it for longer than I have. They've done, you know, 50 or 60 times. Some are in leadership roles and helping to run the weekends.
Is this one of those deals where people get in touch with their inner self, areas yeah. that they've never or very seldom go to?
Yeah, basically. And while these weekends are normally open to all men, there is a tendency to attract mostly straight men. And this, of course, we don't, as a group, we don't go around advertising it. So it's definitely a word-of-mouth thing. So it's sort of like the men who come to these weekends are there because a friend of theirs who had that experience, you know, can say, hey, I had this experience, it did me some good, I want to share it with you. And I'll go ahead and just toss out, we aren't a cult. we're not telling you to give up any of your beliefs or, you know, turn out all your money or anything. If anything, if it were a cult, I wouldn't be anywhere near it. If anything, my own experience, and we're, in a way, it's, the group's not unique. You know, a lot of processes we do through the research, turns out somebody else has already been doing them. But again, it's not, if anything, we promote the idea of each man being empowered to be, you know, their own authority. And we call it the new warrior training adventure because, you know, the concept of the old warrior being kind of this image of, you know, this person is out basically destroying things. And we're kind of saying, no, the basic energy that the warrior represents is okay. It's more how it's being used. So we're promoting the idea of the new warrior, about how the, you know, man can use that warrior energy in a positive, constructive way. Or it's like heard a comment recently on a tape, this videotape we have about somebody talking about electricity. And the comment was, you can use electricity to either cook a man's dinner or you can use it to cook the man. You know, the electricity itself doesn't care.
I think that's a quote from The Secret.
Yeah. But anyway, like I said, most, you know, the tendency is mostly straight men to do these weekends. But I think that's, again, it's just says who most of them are talking to. But we do have a large number of gay men, gay bi men, who have been participating in these processes and then came back and are now still involved in other things we do. We typically have then, anyone's gone through one of these weekends has the option then to continue on, say, in a weekly support group. I participate in one of those myself regularly. I'm actually, what they'll do is they'll have, say, an 8-week group. They'll meet after one of these weekends, and some of us, I'm actually helping to staff one of those right now. We're meeting every Tuesday night. Now, the thing is, what it's leading up to is every now and then, though, we will try, may do a weekend where, again, it's open to all men, but we may still kind of promote it to a certain group. And in April, we did a gay bi weekend. other communities around the country have done this, but this was the first time in Houston. And, you know, it's an, you know, my own experience of it is it turned out to be a good weekend. It turned out to be quite powerful. It was like any others I've done. Like I said, this is number 13 for me. But there was definitely still something different about it. And I say it different in a good way. In that between the men who were staffing and the men who came up to participate, you know, we had something like 26 men go through. Then we had maybe another 40 staffing. And out of that, probably 90% were gay or bi. There was something, you know, like I said, it was just something a little different about the energy in a positive way. And it's like, I'm hoping, hey, we need to do this again. Because it felt good to be there. And that was, you know, that sort of comment. Some men who had had previous experience of doing one of these weekends where it was aimed at a gay bi group had said, yeah, it might be that something a little different. And also some men who were staffing were expressing concern that we're going to have sort of a campy version of one of these weekends, which in practice we didn't. I mean, some of the people who expressed the most concern were going to end up with some sort of, you know, campy version where we're actually some of the gay men on staff. Yeah, you know, I had a couple of guys who were complaining. You know, they're afraid to offend the, you know, they're trying to take care of the straight guys who are on staff, but they were fine. But probably, you know, a couple of things, my own experience, like I said, it, if anything, affirmed my sense of being a member of this tribe. One of the leaders of it on the weekend, they usually have what's referred to as a leader team. There's usually four men who are in a leadership role. And two of those men were gay. And one of those men was actually from out of town. And the usual thing is when they have these leader teams, well, usually three local guys will have one man from out of town come in. And the man from out of town is also gay. But he was definitely promoting that notion of, hey, this, you know, so like, this is our opportunity. And while trying to give away too much, one of the things we did early on as the staff was getting ready, he made a point to go around to each man. He found some paints we had in the storage room. And he took five colors, like, you know, five colors out of the rainbow, and arranged them in such a way a person could dip each finger and thumb into those paint, and then he went around spreading it, say, on people's arms or something like that, as a way of initiating them into the tribe, into the rainbow tribe. And I, as a bi man, who's still kind of sorting some thoughts out about that, was like, oh, good, you know, yes, I feel affirmed that I am somehow a member of this group that I feel called to, that I feel a kinship with. Even though by my own admittance, my basic nature is probably I'm still more straight and gay, but I still feel that connection, and it felt good to have that connection affirmed. And the other thing, you know, my own personal experience of what we went through, I mean, one of the reasons I continue staffing is participating in these things is it's an opportunity for me to continue my own growth and, you know, growth and healing work. And so, like, you know, when I got up to the site and was, you know, we're getting ready to do our stuff and everything, a lot of some strong feelings started coming up, which I was in a place, you know, this is, you know, it's not unique. I've had the experience before, but I was in a better position to name it. And, of course, if I can give it a name, then I'm better able to deal with it. And it came down to a fear of rejection. You know, just a fear of, oh, people aren't going to like me, or oh, they're going to be rejected. It had nothing to do with orientation or anything like that. It's just, you know, oh, you know, maybe somebody won't like me and they'll say bad things to me. And, you know, this is, you know, childhood stuff. But it is still something I struggle with.
But it's a very real fear.
Oh, yeah. And what I did, you know, again, kind of took a little stretch. While we are there for the purpose of helping these new men who are coming through, participating, we're there for them. In practice, of course, we're able to support each other, and we create places where the men who are on staff can kind of do their work. Because, you know, the truth matters, that stuff's going to come up. It's just the nature of the process. And it's encouraged, you know. As long as you, you know, make sure you get your job done. But otherwise, here, there's an opportunity to come do your own thing. And what I did, we had a, you know, opportunity for most staff to get together to say, okay, here's an opportunity to do your own stuff. And I got up and asked, said, here's what I'm dealing with. I've got these issues around rejection coming up. And, of course, the recognition, again, it's a case of something which I've been working on for years, but somehow I got even more a sense in touch of how this is a core issue for me of, you know, fear of rejection, which stops me from doing things otherwise we want to do. And I said, here, here's the issue. I think I have an idea of what I want to do. And basically what I asked for was to be supported. And when I did that, we did an exercise where it was both figuratively and literally. And I got out in the middle of this room where we were doing the work and had sort of like 12 or more men literally support me, pick me up and cradle me and kind of rock me a little bit, you know, and just literally support me. And they're all, you know, kind of remind me, you know, you keep my eyes open, look around, see all these men who are willing to support me. And at some point, they actually literally reached up as high as they could up, you know, held me up as high up as they could. And, of course, that got me in touch with my fear of falling. <You know? laughs> I mean, I'm about ready to out where I can touch the ceiling. But it's like something in my mind kind of like, okay, I get it. And I think it got me more in touch with something that, you know, I've heard in that group, that setting, and elsewhere about, I don't have to do this alone.
You know, I know of a similar type exercise in which there's a bunch of guys standing around in a circle.
Right.
And the guy closes his eyes and he falls back.
Yes.
And everybody just sort of passes him around.
Okay.
And you kind of like get dizzy.
Mm-hmm. Right. But, like I said, for me, it was a powerful experience just taking that stretch and saying, you know, I'm literally, hey, I'm asking for support. And that's sometimes stuff I have trouble asking for. You know, again, to sort of think, oh, I got to do it myself, or maybe nobody will be there or whatever. So for me, it was a stretch. And like I said, so like on some level, my brain got it. You know, it's like, oh, okay. You know, I am loved. I am cared about. And I do can and ask for and get support. And to me, that also continues to tell me this, and this is where I need to keep doing my work. Because, you know, I wasn't cured. So that's something I still have to struggle with. But so like, I now have it out. I have a better sense of what it is. I can name it.
And because I think that fear is pretty universal.
Oh, yeah.
I think most guys, I know I have a fear of rejection.
Mm-hmm.
What people are going to say or not say. You know, what not said sometimes can drive you crazy.
Right.
Yeah, I wanted for them to say something and then to not say anything at all. That's very unnerving.
You know, so I guess those fears that you were having is pretty universal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would say, you know, my way I've tended to express it, though, is actually to hold myself back and maybe kind of sit over in a corner. I mean, right now, here I am on the radio talking, you know, being out there and everything, but put me in a room full of people who I don't know. I'll just kind of pull in and go stay in the corner and hope nobody notices me, which is in conflict with what I honestly want to do, which is to go and interact with people. So that's, you know, that's, like I said, that's, to me, that was a powerful experience. I'm hoping that, you know, the local community, the ward community will do one of these gay bye weekends again. But at the same time, I'm already scheduled to staff another one of these weekends in September. Again, I'm looking forward to it. Something I enjoy doing. This way, in turn, I'm helping other people. And I'll just put it out there, if anybody be interested in learning more about this, we do have a website. It's www.mkphouston.org. That's the local organization, and the parent group is the Mankind Project, which is www.mkp.org. So that'd be a couple of ways to find out more about it. So, okay.
Well, I wanted to say something about something that happened to me last Sunday. As one of the main reasons why, so I did a segment a couple of months or so back about bisexuality in the African American community. I'd like maybe bring that up again sometime, because it's really a major, major problem. And
that exists, or just nobody would acknowledge it.
It's a thing where. We went to the bi movie night tonight, and Rose is one of the members of the BiNet group, and she was suggesting that we're gonna have on December. They decided to make the AIDS Day into an AIDS Week.
Our weekend,
and it happens to fall right on the same time when we're gonna have bi movie night and have the segment on air. So she was suggesting that maybe we ought to make it two events that come together, mm-hmm. which has AIDS consciousness and sex and all that type of stuff that comes with AIDS Day, you know, programs and stuff. Combine that with the BiNet movie night and BiNet. Yeah, that's what I thought about, maybe bringing it on to the show, because. The main problem that I have with the African American community is the majority of the people that have affected with AIDS and HIV is African American female. by me being the descendant of African American and being raised up in a community, it's irritating because I'm female, and I hate to see, you know, my status, you know, being, you know, exterminated like that. It's not good. So, and one of the main problems is the so-called down low behavior, where they're either bi or they bi or gay, and they are basically afraid to come out of the closet and be straight out open, which I think I suggest that maybe they should. I can understand some people, even the white community and the other communities like the Hispanic and the Asians, job situations, you know, maybe you got a job that doesn't exactly promote homosexuality and lesbianism and bisexuality. I can understand that sometimes you can, but a lot of times, other than that, they are all out, you know, with their friends, they're out with community, with their, you know, lover or girlfriend or whatever. If you're bisexual, you're going to be out with your girlfriend or your boyfriend. But in this case, it's where it's so stigmatized that they're not even out with their friends or out with their lovers or their girlfriends or whoever. And it really becomes a problem because a lot of these guys like to go out on the prowl, so to speak. And a lot of them don't believe in using protection. I don't know why. It's like, duh, you know, use your common sense. But for some reason, they like to go bareback. And they may catch, you know, infect the virus. And then they go home because their girlfriends or their wives don't know that they're like that. They don't want them to find out. So they pass it on to their wives or their girlfriends. Now, they got AIDS. They don't know they got it. They think they're clean, so they don't go get checked when they go to the doctor. They don't ask the doctor, oh, I'd like to get an AIDS test with my exam or whatever. You know, they don't. It'd be like way down the line, so it's like way progressed it all the way to where it's almost at the last stages, and it's, you know, when it's worse, it's best to catch it early as possible. It's like all any right. other thing, any other virus or any other disease or anything like that.
Is it possible that in the black community, AIDS is still considered as a gay white man's disease?
Well, they're aware of it more that it can spread to everybody, but it's one of those things where we don't want to talk about it. It's just uncomfortable to talk about.
Oh, well, I know that I keep hearing, even on television and on the radio, I keep hearing how AIDS is ravaging the female African-American community.
Mm-hmm.
But every time I hear that, I say to myself, well, if it's getting the female, there had to be a male who gave it to her, and that male has it.
See, this right. is one of the main major problems. This is like really one of my big pet peeves in the black community is this machoism. This thing about manism. This follows on the lines of what David was talking about in the first part of the segment. It's about the Mankind Project, which I'm thinking about maybe actually trying to get the Mankind Project to promote more African Americans and Hispanics and Asians to have a weekend for this certificate.
Right, for that group.
Group. Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, because a lot of these guys have this machoism, especially in the rap community. In the rap, the rappers, you know, people that are in the rap and rap culture. And most of the time when you listen to most rap music today, you're going to hear a lot of homophobic, disrespecting women, which you heard with the Amos situation, which I felt is Amos got in trouble for this. I think a lot of these rappers and other people should too, you know, going around disrespecting women and calling them out their name the way they do. But I mean, this has really been a really major problem, and a lot of times black people just don't want to address that. It's their problem. It's not our problem, but it's a big, it's like having an elephant in the room. The elephant in the room, and he's constantly going to the bathroom, and you're having to walk through the crowd.
And still deny it's there.
And still deny it's there. And so it's frustrating. When last week I came up here with a friend of mine, With they had a 9 o'clock segment. I can't think of the name of it right now. I don't have it right in front of me.
Show on Sundays.
Yeah, it's a show that's Sunday night. It's an African American focal point. They had this guy that was on there. I don't have a problem with the DJ stuff. They're pretty good people. I enjoy their show. I listen to them every Sunday. But they had this one person that called in that had written this book. He was doing a research on the Greek society, how the Greeks practiced homosexuality and bisexuality, how it was part of the norm, how it wasn't such a big hoo-ah. It was actually part of the culture and part of the norm, and how he was saying that that you know they brought little boys to the gymnasiums and you know they would have sex or whatever with them and stuff like that, which is probably true. I read up on it myself and I find some that to be true, but I mean he wants to equate it as Africans had no behavior of such matter, and he might be telling the truth. I don't know. I looked up a lot of African history, and I really haven't found anything, just little bits and pieces, but not as significant as any other, like other cultures that I ran into that I studied. But still, he didn't have to get on the air and just blast it, the homosexual community, putting them out there as these so-called trauma molesters, and, you know, he definitely has a little homophobia. Or a lot of homophobia, the message that I was getting. So he just blasted the homosexual community, saying that, oh, this is not an African-American behavior. It's because we've been immigrated, you know, and been coexisting with the Europeans' race. It's because now us black people and other ethnic people are practicing this behavior. And it's like, I don't believe that. I think it might have been there all the time. It's just been so secretive that it somehow didn't get put into history.
Well, you know, I studied a lot about different ancient tribal groups from America, Mesoamerican.
Like Native American?
Native Americans, mm-hmm. Mexicans, Central South America, mm-hmm. Europe. Gay people have always been there, gay and lesbian.
Right.
That's what, yeah.
And they've always been in the tribes, and they've always been treated as very special. Hmm. And there is, and it's all over. It was in India. It was in China. And it was out in the Pacific. And there is absolutely no evidence at all whatsoever to show that the African continent was immune from that.
Yeah, right.
And it was all along and accepted. You see, where it's accepted, it doesn't get noted.
Yeah, that's
right.
In Denmark, in Europe, in Western Europe, you won't find a gay bar, per se.
Uh-huh.
You know, gays just go to the clubs.
Right.
There's just no gay clubs. They're just accepted.
But also one thing is this, we're going to talk about HIV, AIDS, and African-American community. You know, in Africa, the spread of HIV, AIDS is a lot more in the heterosexual community.
Right.
Yes.
And if you want to talk about, you know, we talk about how in the United States, the African-American community has the down low, which is considered such a stupid concept. The tribal customs you have over in some of the African countries, where if a man has HIV, he is to have sex with a virgin.
Yes.
No matter how old she is, the younger the better,
mm-hmm.
to rid himself of the HIV virus.
Yes. I mean, I heard a case where a 2-year-old girl got raped.
Mm-hmm.
Because he felt that, oh, she's 2 years old, she's a virgin. So they raped this girl, they nearly mm-hmm. killed her.
You also have where the spread of HIV occurs in Africa, of men who go to the big city to find work, and to satisfy their needs, they go and get a prostitute, have sex, they come home, they give it to their wife, and then, once again, tribal custom fits in,
mm-hmm.
the man dies from HIV, so, according to custom, his brother marries his brother's widow. So then she passes the HIV on to him.
Mm-hmm. So it's just a big old mess pool, you know.
Yes.
It's like the chicken. A lot of the chicken farms where they throw the chicken into this soup they call in it, and then one chicken has like something wrong with it. All the chicken's gonna get, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just the same concept. But this, I mean, this guy had me so upset. I'm sitting here among all these heterosexual. African-American men and women, and I'm the only one there that's bisexual in nature. And so
you're representing the whole GLBT community right
basically,
there.
Basically, I'm not going to say any names of them because I don't want to start any crap in the station. But they all was agreeing with this guy, and it's like, how the hell you going to agree with something like this? I mean, yeah, he done his research, but he has his biasm. With this homophobic, you got to kind of look at things with an open mind. Not try not to be biased when you look through history.
As I was going to say, you know, talking about some of the customs in Africa about, you know, finding the youngest girl possible. Actually, that attitude existed in some parts of Europe in the 19th century, even being recommended in medical journals. You know, when I deal with some health issue, go find a young virgin. You know, so yeah. I get, you know, the mid-19th century being promoted.
I mean, this guy, and I think this is part of some of the reasons why AIDS is so rapid in the black community. I'm not singling them out. It's just one of the main problems that I have, and I'm going to admit that we do have issues. I'm not going to say, oh, we better than those white people or we better than those Mexicans. Hell no. We got the same problems anybody else do and maybe worse. So when we have a problem with something and we don't want to address it, that irritates the crap out of me, because I believe if you got a problem, you need to address it, or else it's going to always fester. It's like a sore, a sore doesn't be treated and it gets infected. Oh, I'm just going to ignore it. Yeah, next thing you know, you get your arm cut off because of it. So it's one of those things where it's been going on for a long time now. And people like this get on the air and promote this tripe that I call. Totally bashing gays, totally saying that gay people are pedophiles and all that. Last I checked, most pedophiles are heterosexual, the last I checked. I mean, not even bisexual. And bisexual, I mean, that's a big range of bisexuality.
Right.
And come to find out, not even bisexual. Most of them are straight heterosexual. They just got this sickness. It's not related to anything being homosexuality or lesbian. That's a whole different thing. So it's like this guy needs to really do his homework and do his research on what homosexuality really is. I mean, I'm not gay or anything, but at least I try to find as much as possible about gay and lesbianism, as much as possible. I'm not going to sit up there and just judge something because I don't really understand what it is.
Well, the reason they always equate homosexuality with pedophilia is to scare people.
Mm-hmm.
There's no truth in it, but it's a scare tactic.
Right.
That's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the African-American community, basically, I would love for them to be able to come out of the closet if they're gay or bi or lesbian. I mean, I would love for them to be able to come out in their own community, not have to come over into Montrose. It's nice to come over to Montrose because that's when I had to find out about myself, especially coming over here and getting information. But it would be nice if they can do it in their own community too, where it's accepted and it's just part of the norm, where it's okay to be gay, it's okay to be bi. And, you know, teach them, do you say sex? You know, it's okay to use a condom. It's not being wimpy or anything, or, oh, I can't feel anything. Crap. I don't really like for David to wear a condom. It doesn't feel as good, but you know what? When I first met David, we insist on wearing one. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
'Cause right.
I don't know. I know him, but I really don't know him. So it's important to use, you know, condoms, dandadams, or what you call them, dandadams?
Yeah, dental dams.
Dental dams. You know, and other safe methods, you know, even when you're going down on someone or giving them a blowjob, it's important to use some type of protection the barrier between you and that other person, because you don't want to spread it. It's like this stigmatism, this bad stigmatism with safe sex, and just all this machoism and all this wrong information. And it's hard to get them to really understand and really want to do this. And then you have somebody get on the air, especially KPFT of all things, you know, this liberal station, you know, and talk all this crap about, you know, gays and, you know, oh, Africans just don't practice that. It's like Africa got so many problems. It's like, how dare you say that Africa is this perfect nation, which it is. It's the motherland, mm-hmm. you know, that I call it, because it's where I come from. But we also have our problems, and I'm not going to sit up there and say, oh, we're perfect and all that stuff, and everybody else is not. It's just not right, mm-hmm. and it's wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sitting here, you know, listening, thoughts run through my about my own experience dealing with that, you know. You know, occasionally go over to one of the baths, and enjoy it, and take appropriate precautions.
Mm-hmm.
But I've noticed I have tendency, you know, might be there, and there be a few African-American men there, and some, hey, okay, like, ooh, look at him. But I'm reluctant to approach them because of this thought back that, oh, they could be infected, you know, and I don't want to catch it. You know, even though I could still take appropriate action, appropriate ways, it's famous out there, still that little thought back of mine. And so that kind of, to me, it's a way of promoting the racism, which I, you know, don't want to do.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you, where do you get that information? I mean, the thought, the information that triggers the thought.
Yeah, it's just that hearing about the AIDS virus seemed to be, you know, becoming more of a problem in the black community. And, of course, I have my own desire to take care of myself.
You know, this station was one of the very first stations in Houston to tell people that whenever you have sex,
mm-hmm.
even if they say no, automatically assume
yes.
right.
that other one is infected
exactly. right.
and take protection. It doesn't matter what race they are
mm-hmm.
or how old or how rich or how poor or how young they are.
Mm-hmm.
Assume.
Right.
Because you can't tell. I mean, I ran into people that had AIDS. I ran into this one guy at the gym going to go work out. This guy is, like, hot. He was gay, you know, but dang, he looked good. I mean, he was, like, fit. Like, he looked like a Bowflex, a Bowflex guy. He could be on a Bowflex commercial. He was that good looking. And one day, you know, I see him every day. I come in there and working out. We work out, whatever. And one day, him and this other guy was talking about all this medication they got to talk. And I go, what? I hope I'm not dipping in y'all Kool-Aid or anything, but why do y'all gotta take so much medication? Because this doesn't make any sense to me. You know, he said, well, we have AIDS. What? Yeah, we have AIDS. And the guy's name was Bob. He goes, and I have one lung. You got to be kidding me. He said, yeah, I got pneumonia once and I lost my lung. I had to remove it. I'm going, oh my God, you put me to shame, and I'm perfectly healthy. I don't have any virus or anything.
Well, you know, people make the wrong assumption as to who has AIDS and who doesn't.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
People erroneously look at me and see that I'm overweight. I guess in some medical journals, I'd be considered morbidly obese. They automatically assume that I do not have AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't. But just because I'm heavyset does not mean that I don't. I know of a lot of heavyset people who are HIV infected. And,
right.
I've seen a good number of them pass on. And they'll look at somebody who's like, what she was just talking about, somebody who's really built.
Right.
That, you know, they're healthy as can be, but they may not be.
Right.
See, one another big misconception with the black community is it's getting where a point where a lot of women are getting afraid of men, like, he's gay or not? Because you can't really tell Holly sometimes. And so a lot of black women are starting to realize that this is happening, and it's a fear going. It's like, I don't want that to happen either. I don't want to have fear either. I just want to have common sense and knowledge. Okay, this if he is gay or not, you know, I'm safe with him. I want to be able to be safe with this guy. So that's the only thing that I'm looking for to happen in the community. I don't want any fear, because fear, all it does, make things worse. I mean, you know that full hand.
Right.
Especially back in the 80s.
Right. Okay. Yeah, what else we got going on here? Got anything else about that? Or I'm thinking about my own experience. There's this gay men's group you go out with, and say gay men's nudist group. I go to, yeah, oh, okay, you know, big Roy here getting his eyes just got big. tell me more about it. And, you know, for a reason, it tends to be mostly white guys, but there are a couple of black men there. And again, there's one guy in there, I see him, every now and then I see him, I'm like, oh my God, why do I have to also be attracted to women too? So I can get rid of that, I got to go with this.
You know? Yeah,
and,
I feel to that.
You know, the ebony statue type image.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so. Yeah, I've never got a chance to, you know, talk to the guy that much. But, you know, I kind of look at him like, oh, wow. But again, it's, you know, the point being, he's gay and black. So this is like, okay, that contradicts that measure where the guy you were hearing on the radio last week was talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if one day they find out that in Africa, homosexuality, lesbianism, and bisexuality, and transgender, or whatever else there is out there, it's just an all the way till man started.
I got to tell you an experience that happened the day before yesterday. I was riding on the bus, the number 52 Scott. Mm-hmm. And that goes right on straight through the Third Ward.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Third Ward in South Park.
You know, there was this black drag queen who got on the bus. And everybody starts snickering and laughing and all this other stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this other big black guy got on the bus as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave everybody the evil eye. He put his arm around that black drag queen, and they took their seat on the bus. And he dared anybody to say anything.
Oh,
and
okay.
That was the quietest bus ride.
Okay.
So not all macho black guys are on the down low.
Oh, okay. No, it's close.
Some are very out and defiant.
I mean, right. I would go to Martini's, and there are some nice-looking black guys in there. It's a straight-up gay and lesbian African-American bar and club, nightclub. There was some other things that I wanted to bring up. I was actually thinking of some future subject matters on the show. Is me and David has been affiliated with going into swingers clubs. We went to some swingers parties in the past. Mm-hmm. And they turn out to be total disasters.
Shame.
Because the idea is, okay, only when we go to the meet and greets, you know, they have meet and greets before they have the party, for say, you know, you got to sign in and all that stuff, make sure, you know, they invite you and all that type of stuff. And usually on the paper they ask different questions like, oh, do you like BDSM? Do you like to have sex with five or six people or just one? And one question they ask is, are you bisexual? I put, yeah. You know, and David, he puts on there, yeah. So, then we find out later, went a couple of times, that it's catered to bisexuals, but only female bisexuals.
Yeah.
I mean, if you male bisexuals, like, oh, no, you know, so it's a different type of atmosphere when it comes to that.
David, correct me if I'm wrong, but ever since either one of us has been alive, straight men have always loved the lesbian, and it's been their fantasy to be with lesbians, and they get the lesbian porn,
right?
You know, so there's so much phoniness going on there.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'll talk about this a little bit. As far as things I'm attracted to. You know, seeing two women going together is not a big thing for me. You know, so for some men, though, it is. For me, it's not. I've even checked, you know, when I've had a chance to see some, you know, porn tapes, and Robin has one. And I'm looking at these women do it. And yeah, I found it arousing, though. When it came right down to it, I was kind of looking at the individual women more than I was that, oh, there's two women doing it. I mean, I've, you know, that scene is not a big turn on for me. I don't seek it out.
Well, you are a small percentage.
Right.
Very small.
Bisexual right. And mm-hmm. heterosexual male.
That, don't go crazy over that.
Right.
Don't go crazy. But it's one of the things I wanted to address was,
I mean, I've seen in person for real. It's like, yeah, that's interesting, though, but hey, I don't want to watch her do something. Anyway.
But anyway, I was suggesting that one day in the future, one of the future shows, that we went to this, you know, party, and mm-hmm. we got kicked out. No explanation, no reason, just you out. I'm like, I'm the type of person is, okay, if you don't like me and you don't want me in something, tell me about it. And I probably would walk away and say, okay, you don't want me here, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to help me here. But the way they did it, it was just so...
I guess stop
tacky.
In fact, no explanation at all. Just, you know, stop sending the invitations. It's like I'm writing back, what happened? You forgot to send it to me.
And then the second time we went to the meet and greet.
Yeah, went back.
We went to the meet and greet. Okay, let's find out. Maybe they lost our web address. I don't know. We went down there to the meet and greet. Everything was great. Oh, we look forward to you being there. Da, da, da. You know, next thing you know, he sends in the email to let him know that we're coming. And we still invite it. Oh, no, you're not invited. It's like, huh?
What?
You know, like Scooby-Doo. Huh? You know, I mean, it's like, what is this? I have never been in a group where if they don't want you there, they just like, oh, you're not. They all of a sudden, they're friendly with you, and all of a sudden, they always say, well, we need to talk to you. You don't mind if we go around the side here and we just talk? We got a problem here that we need to address. Okay, what's the problem? Maybe it's something that I'm doing that I'm not aware of. Maybe I offended somebody. I thought I didn't, and I'm not aware of it or whatever. Let me know, and I might can change that. And if you don't want me here anyway, fine, I'll go somewhere else. And I'll be cool with it. I wouldn't be upset. I can understand. But the way they did it was like, tacky.
I don't know. My own experience, you know, exploring this stuff, if it is a group, maybe is comfortable with bisexuality or homosexuality, don't seem to be a problem. Yeah, me and Robin have gone to a couple of parties where it was for bisexual men.
Uh huh. You know? Exactly.
And Robin was sort of token female, but you know, everybody otherwise welcome. Hey, come on in. It's not like there's a female here. Let's go after her. You know, in practice, the guys are going after each other more than they were. She wasn't ignored, but she wasn't the center of attention either.
Some days I went there and everybody was all over me, and then other times it was just everybody was just doing something.
Right.
I was basically watching or whatever.
At the same time. My Ray Woods considered me limited experience because it's only a couple of times in these swingers groups where something happened, like I said, we're no longer involved. But I somehow pick up an energy, for lack of a better term, of somehow being very restrictive, very focused, even kind of being exclusive.
Very secretive.
Right.
I mean, here we are, gay, lesbian, and bisexual. On the radio,
right,
blabbing all our money business all over the airwaves.
Right.
Here we got like this whole community where you can come here. Oh, we're right here. There's a nudist group. They can be a little secretive, but it's like,
yeah, just
we're here.
Being respectful of people's, you know,
being
privacy.
People's privacy, but they letting you know there is a group here. You can come and check us out. It's not, you have to be invited. It's like, David's in this news group. He said, hey, why don't you take Brian? He didn't have to, I got this guy named Brian. He's gay. He wants to come. Can he be invited? He's like, hey, guys, I brought my friend Brian here. You guys, he's gay and he's new in the area. You know.
Yeah.
It ain't this... You know, all this secrecy is so silly. And here these people are straight.
That's supposed to be the norm.
And it's like, and usually bisexuals, gay, and lesbians have to fight to have their rights to be out, okay? Here we are fighting to be gay, here, you know. And here they already got the privilege, and here they are going, she's like, what is the problem? You know, so it's like... That energy kind of threw me off. And then another thing is, When we got kicked out, we went to Gigi. And Gigi said, I can't stand swingers groups. And I said, why? He said, because it's all about making this heterosexual man feel good and happy. Because he's so insecure about himself that, oh, I got a little gay, I have some gay tendencies. Oh, can't let nobody know about it because they're going to think I'm wimpy. Oh, I'm not a man anymore, yeah. You know, that type yeah. of thing. And it's like, come on. It's like, so these guys are walking around with their chests out. Oh, yeah, man, I'm just going to screw every woman in here. You know, and so David can't come out and be bisexual. He says, oh, I'm bi. They all like run away from him, like, get away. He's weird, you know.
Well, of course, if I go in that kind of environment, you know, it is because, well, we're, in this case, maybe I want to kind of play with a gay, with a straight side. You know, yeah, enjoy love Robin, enjoy being sexual with her. You know, every now and then I might like to play with somebody else. And that's, you know, at least in theory, that might be a good place to do it, where at least I can be honest. You know, hey, lady, I like you. I like the way you look, and let's go play. You know, let's
be honest about it. I like David, too, because he's not a... He's like, I'm a man. I'm bisexual, but I'm still a man.
Mm-hmm.
I still can work on the truck when it breaks down. You know, I don't mind getting my hands dirty. You know, I can... fight as I have to, or whatever what means being a man is, he has that. Being bisexual doesn't make him any more or less of a man as any other heterosexual man out there.
Brings up something that came when I was talking about the Warrior Weekend earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of shifting subjects back, but one of the co-leaders was straight. It's been doing this work for several years and all. Towards the end of the weekend, he was talking about that he still, you know, learned some stuff and learned some valuable lessons about how it is that a gay man can still be masculine. So that, you know, and that was, right? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God. I ran into some gay man. That was so masculine. It's like, you gay? Why? You know.
And I use the term masculine as opposed to, say, macho or, you know.
Machismo, whatever right. you call it. But before the time ran out, I wanted to address that one of future shows. I wanted to invite this guy that basically, his name is David.
Yeah, that's all we'll say.
I'm not going to say his last name or anything. Okay. It's some millions of Davids out there.
Right.
But he basically,
He's kind of coordinator for a couple of these bi men groups, include that also do parties.
Yeah, maybe one day, which is suitable, to have him on the air one night with us, and we can talk more further about these bi parties that know, swingers parties. Because normally you hear about swingers parties for straight people, but it's very rarely that you would hear swingers parties for bi. Another party that I've been to that's basically bisexual or gay or whatever is my friend named Gene. He has parties. At his place. And he has like toca parties and New Year's Eve parties. And they strictly target towards anybody. Like heterosexuals can come, anybody can come, and everybody. And it's not this secretive thing. I can go out and say, hey, I got this toca party. You want to come with me? It's not a big secret. You do got to sign a paper because it's nudity, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm. No children allowed.
No children allowed or anything like that, but it's no big secret. It's like, hey, big boy, Gene's having his party. Want to come with me? It ain't like, you got a...
got a hot tub.
So basically, this is one of the things that I learned about swingers party, because I have never been to a swingers party until, you know, a couple of years. And I wish I would have asked Gigi about it before, so I can know what to expect, but, you know, it's a learning curve. You learn what to do and what not to do, and basically it's a bunch of straight men that needs to make their ego be stroked,
right.
so to speak, with their little bitty piece-sized testicles.
Right, okay.
They have. Mm-hmm.
Tell me how you really feel.
I had this one guy... follow me around on the whole night. He did it with every female that was there. And it must have been about at least quite, how many people? Maybe,
I don't know, about 25, 30 people there.
Yeah.
You know.
And he was, I was the only female he haven't done. So to speak, I just did it with David, and then I did with this fine-looking guy named Chad. So he was like, okay, I'm going to do her. And he just bugged me to hold on, and I said no. And basically, this guy was doing it in 30 seconds. I seen rabbits do it longer. And he just, this one lady that was there, she was fine. Anyway, to make a long story short, time's running out. I ended up turning him down, and I think he's the reason why we got kicked out of the party.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, we getting ready
and
to
you're saying one of,
wrap it up.
One
here.
Of the number one rules of these parties is that no means no. Well, Robin said no, and
we suspect
the guy, I can't confirm it, I have no idea. We're just speculating. We just know this is what happened when we were there. So, anyway, what else going on?
So, we're getting ready to wrap it up soon. But, I mean, that's part of the reason why I'm kind of glad we don't go to those parties anymore. Those survive parties.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whew. Okay.
Had a couple things I wanted to drop in here before we wrap up here. We got a MBB letter
from Jaime.
From Jaime. Hopefully, Jaime, you're listening. Grab a I don't want to say pencil because I don't know what they allow you to have. Grab a writing instrument.
Yeah.
And I'll give you some information you want here in a second. Jaime's asking, he said he's able to get the KPFT signal loud and clear.
Hooray.
He enjoyed last week's show, the interview with Ms. Money.
I enjoyed that too.
Oh, I did too. I'm going to have to buy some of her CDs.
He asked, JD played a song about from a transgender rock group called Lipstick Conspiracy.
I don't have that group yet.
So we're looking at that.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim said that there's a gallery here in the Heights called Gallery 19 that has some of his artwork there. And He's written to the gallery and did not get a response. He's just wondering if his work is still there.
So you checked it out.
And he said that there was a website for them and wanted to find out if his artwork was there. And yes, it is. It's gallery19heights.org. And there's a section of
How did you find that out?
I did a search of Gallery 19 Houston.
Oh.
There's a section called the Convicted Arts Collective.
Oh.
And he has this really nice watercolor on there.
It's beautiful.
Called In the Realm of Existence.
Mm-hmm.
Which now means I've given out his last name, but only if you go to the website.
Oops.
Well, he told us the way. If you go there, you'll see. So
you got to tell him to check out Rock B-I-C-T-H. This is a really cool group.
Well, you know, it's a little limited on the music library in prison.
Yeah. Okay. That's Gallery 19 Heights. Heights.
Like the neighborhood area.
.com?
Mm-hmm. .org.
.org?
.org. He asked about Jim Squared, unfortunately.
I know.
The square root of Jim Squared is in Oklahoma.
I really missed that show, too. I had a lot of fun with Jim on that.
I also wanted to ask about, Mary still has that large black and white silhouette painting of the girl with the microphone in her hand on the
and
wall that faces Montrose?
That was Janis Joplin, and that was painted out, and a new painting was put up. And recently, it was painted out. So, you're two paintings behind, Jaime. I'm sorry to say. But I really hated when they painted over the Janis Joplin. That was incredible artwork.
That's just wrong.
That was wrong.
Just so uncalled for.
Yeah.
On Sunday.
Sunday.
May 20th at 7 p.m., Rice University Media Center is hosting one a part of the Houston Palestine Film Festival.
Really?
They'll be featuring a film on that date and time called 0 Degrees of Separation.
Mm-hmm.
It's a documentary that takes viewers on a unique journey through the complex lives of Israeli and Palestinian gays and lesbians and in inter-ethnic relations.
Wow.
They're living on the margin of society. These couples defy the odds existing in the midst of conflict with a gentle humanity and mutual respect.
That's got to be a tough life.
Ed Flanders, who is the director,
will be present at the screening. We'll answer questions at the end.
Oh. That's not this weekend. It's next weekend.
Next weekend. On Sunday, May 20th at 7 p.m. at Rice
weekend
University.
After next.
Yes, weekend after next.
Yeah.
Not Mother's Day, week after
Day.
The Houston Palestine Film Festival is co-sponsored in part by KPFT 90.1 FM.
What do you know?
Want to let you know about that. And,
Gallery19heights.org.
Yeah, I was going to have this one last story here. Gig Harbor, Washington.
Yes.
Dozens of Gig Harbor High School students demonstrated outside school Monday to protest an official's decision to show parents surveillance video of their daughter kissing another girl.
Oh.
The controversy arose after the school's dean of students, Keith Nelson, saw the two kissing and holding hands and found video of it on the surveillance system. He showed it to the parents of one of the girls because they had asked to be kept apprised of her behavior. The parents have moved the girl to a different school district after watching it. One student reporting the demonstration for the school newspaper said the protesters believe it was improper use of surveillance video.
Absolutely.
Classes continued after the disruption, and said the president. He congratulated the students on holding a peaceful demonstration. The protesters wore T-shirts that said free love and waved peace signs.
So transferring to a different school, like, that's going to fix anything.
Exactly. No, they didn't transfer. The parents pulled her out. And took her to another school. It wasn't a transfer. The principal agreed that it was wrong to show the surveillance video to the parents and said from now on, school officials may only use the surveillance for security monitoring and discipline for actions such as trespassing, vandalism, and fighting. You've been listening to After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude. I just wanted to drop it in and let you know about the news. We don't have much time, Roy.
Yeah, I was going to say, did we give Jack Walensky...
Yes, we did. Thank you for listening.
Yes, we announced that in the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.